And welcome, everyone, to the conference. Please note today's event is being recorded. Please stand by.
Okay, so I would like to, this is Floyd Eisenberg, Senior Vice President of Health Information Technology at National Quality Forum, and I want to welcome everyone to breakout session number 3, the Technical Working Group. This is part of the eMeasure Learning Collaborative. For those of you who are just dialing in or calling in for this session, this is to talk about methods for managing e-measures and implementation and creating direct queries to find information in existing electronic systems and how to express, how one might express what one needs so that EHRs and systems like that can work. So I want to just lay a few ground rules. One is we have in this session a need, and I think do our slides do this for us, to say what this collaborative is about. It's a public initiative convened by NQF. Some of you will find this a repeat, to promote shared learning. Basically, for those of you who heard Farzad Mastashari's charge, basically to find the bright lights out there and find some of the shared best practices and the key components that are common that can be replicated and move this forward. In this particular group, we're going to be looking at what are some of the challenges in trying to express what we want to say and getting it to work. I'd like to leave it open to not just talk about meaningful use, let's talk about measurement in general. Not that meaningful use isn't important, it certainly is, but I think what we want to talk about is how we can deal with information. So that's the area. What we will be doing in this group is you will hear, rather than vignettes, some of the initiatives now underway and some of the challenges in expressing what we want to say and how and suggestions for moving forward. So we want to identify what currently can be done, what are the gaps, and some recommendations. At the end of this meeting, where we're upstairs at 2 o'clock?
2 o'clock, yeah.
2 o'clock. There will be a presentation of our findings. So as we through this and have a discussion, we're going to have to come up with key elements to present to the whole group, and every one of the breakouts will be doing the same. So since it's relatively small, I think it would be good to go around the room and we can all introduce ourselves. Do we want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
Jonathan Owens from Southeast Texas Medical Associates, and my title is Clinical Systems Engineer, so that relates to our EHR and the data we gather and then what we do with it.
I'm Daryl Roberts with the American Nurses Association. I'm the Senior Policy Fellow for Health Information Technology.
Pele Yu, I'm the CMIO for St. Louis Children's Hospital. I was involved in HL7, launching the QRDA, you know, within the Child Health Work Group.
I'm Delaine Help. I'm from the AMA PCPI. I'm a project manager. I focus on quality measurement implementation in EHRs.
I'm Kathleen Charters from the Defense TRICARE Management Activity, and I work for the Office of the Chief Medical Information Officer as a liaison between the business side of healthcare and the IM and IT sides of healthcare.
I'm Mary Brayman. I'm proud to say I'm from NCQA. I am the Assistant Vice President of Measure Validation, and we are, among many things, currently working on 5 contracts to specify e-measures.
Hi, everyone. I'm Melissa Manning. I work for Deloitte Consulting in their federal healthcare practice, currently working with ONC.
I'm Eric Kupo. I'm a senior manager at Deloitte Consulting. I also work at ONC. I'm the lead for our standards harmonization work there and for the FNI framework and then also for Query Health Initiative.
Anil Advani, I'm Associate Director of Informatics at Indian Health Service, which is one of the octaves of HHS. And my background is as an academic at Children's Hospital of Boston and specifically in quality measurement, amongst other things. And we have a lot of automated quality measurement that we do at IHS.
My name is Ahmed Haq. I'm a senior project manager for Health IT here at NQF.
I'm Chris Millett. I'm also a senior project manager here at NQF.
And for those on the phone?
My name is Uzma Jilani from Baylor Health Systems, and I'm an IT developer.
Anyone else?
My name is Chris Bontempi. I'm an architect advisor with the McKesson Provider Technologies Corporation.
Okay, so let's move on to our discussions here. So what you'll be looking, what you need to think about as you listen to the two presentations and then have our discussion is what are some real examples of what works and suggestions for how to move this forward, what are mechanisms to enhance data and workflow, and recommendations around the technical. So since we're more looking at the technical infrastructure, it's a little less best practice examples unless you have ways that specifically that you make this happen outside the current structure that exists in eMeasure. We would look for that that input because I think that'll be helpful. Oh, I'm sorry.
No. You can drive.
Let Chris drive. So I think we've addressed pretty much identify current efforts, review the benefits in this case, and challenges of what we see now in the standard underpinning for the e-measures that you see is called the Health Quality Measure Format, HQMF. It is a draft standard for trial use from HL7, and you'll hear some discussion about that from Eric. And there are some benefits and challenges using the reference information model to explain the data within it. Some of it is good because it allows us to explain the context of where the data should be, and many measure developers have suggested they need that. And it's challenging because it doesn't allow a lot of logic. It wasn't developed for that. It was developed as information about the patient. So looking at some of those and look at some of the requirements for the queries. We're not trying to replicate Query Health. That's a different effort, but we want to be complementary.
Is Query Health an initiative or an organization?
It's an initiative you'll hear about from Eric. So you're going to hear about Query Health, a little overview of HQMF QRDA, but more in expressing measures that are now being considered for new government programs. And I'm looking at Mary mainly because some of these questions are coming directly from NCQA in trying to express measures. One of them specifically, if you heard Farzad Mastacharya talk about the VA measure for warfarin management, number of days patient is within threshold or out of threshold, raises some interesting calculation questions of how do you express that? Well, should you? In the measure, should that be within or external? So that'll be a good set of discussion. So we'll have the discussion of formats and requirements. We will have a working lunch at 12 to 12:15, where lunch will be brought to the room. Was someone able to describe where local restrooms are?
I'm not sure if everyone found them, but there's a ladies' room out this hallway to the left, and there's a men's room out the hallway to the right.
Okay. That's important for people on the phone. Okay. You'll have to find your own, though. So then we'll work to summarize some key points for a report out, which will come back into the large session at 2:30. So, fine. So we're going to start with a presentation by Eric Pupo from Deloitte on Query Health and current status.
All right. Thank you, everybody. So we're going to go ahead and start it right away. As I said, I'm the manager for the Query Health Initiative, and one of the interoperability initiatives that OMC has been pushing forward. Just a brief introduction to Deloitte. We do a lot of work in federal healthcare. Certainly it's just our kind of buzzword, buzzline to get started. Let's actually just move right into it. One of the things we found with the Career Health Initiative, and just to give you an overview of what we're trying to do here, is what we want to try to do is use the information that is available as part of quality reporting, as part of EHRs, as part of clinical data sources, to make that information available not just for what currently happens with quality measure reporting, but also for what we call distributed queries. This is one of the visions that Farzad Mostashari has laid out for ONC as a potential area where not just that we create the mechanism for it, we create the specific standards. And in this case, what we decided was not to create standards, but to reuse what exists, but also to provide a glide path for organizations to begin to implement, whether it's through pilots or whether it's through changes to their existing environment, a way forward to actually support this capability. It's viewed as something that could potentially be included as part of meaningful use stage three. I obviously can't speak to stage three. I don't really know where that's going to go. But the idea is we get the standards, we get the mechanism, we get the implementation guidance ready for that point in time for consideration of distributed queries as a potential requirement. Now, what we found, the initiative started with just providing a set of high-level requirements. We started with the idea of expanded analysis of type 2 diabetes measures. Pretty good information available on that. We can get that information from NQF. We can take a look at how those measures are reported now. And then we can determine if distributed queries of that information could be made from clinical data sources from EHRs. What we found also in looking at that starting point was QDM. There it is. It's there. It's a living model of information to support quality measure reporting. So what we found was that could be a really good foundational source of how to structure the information to support expanded analysis type 2 diabetes groups. Now, what can inevitably happen with an organization like ONC is you start with a rather narrow scope, and then more and more people dive in and say, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. So we also created a more generic requirement just to support generic distributed queries, with the idea that those generic distributed queries would need to support some specific pieces of information. Information you would find in most electronic health record systems and in many clinical data sources. So things like medications, allergies, problems, and many of those, again, aligning to the QDM. All of that information is in there. It's with the idea of the more generic queries, again, based on let's try to reuse NQF e-measures to do that, to support distributed queries. And then when we talk about the inclusion of the QDM in meaningful use stage two, as a relatively recent development with that rule, proposed rule coming out, QDM was included. So a lot of the work that we've done to start to align the Query Health Initiative to QDM can get now considered as part of inclusion of QDM into meaningful use stage two. What I want to focus on is some of the challenges that we found, because that's where this group can help and come in. And this is not necessarily us reaching out and just saying, help us. It's more some of the challenges we see is concerns that will grow not just in the scope of query health, but just in general quality reporting overall. And I've discussed a lot of these with Floyd. Floyd has provided some very good feedback on this. Things like recognizing the difficulties of calculations and interpretations for each measure. When we talk about queries, part of queries is the idea that potentially we could do calculations and interpretations directly within the query language itself. Not easy. It's very difficult to do. Same thing in terms of simplified language. One of the feedbacks was, well, e-measures are hard. They're hard to develop. The coding language itself is HTML. Again, it's really hard to do. But making something simplified doesn't always mean it's simple, because you still have to look at the underlying standard that's being used. And in this case, I'll go over some of the changes we did to HTML. But in this case, we aesthetically simplified it, but not necessarily foundationally simplified it. And then finally, we clearly found that we don't have a solution, nor does, in a lot of cases, does anybody else, to consistency in vocabularies and value sets. Without value set governance, without a clear idea of what vocabularies to use, although we're getting there a little bit with some of the recommendations that have started to come out from the standards committee, we're not there yet. So we suffer from the same problem, because sending a query to somebody with a specific vocabulary or value set that they might not be able to understand or map to their local system creates the same problems you would have with quality measures. Next slide. So one of the things we did initially was we created this clinical element data dictionary. And the idea was the QDM, in reviewing the QDM, we thought that was a great base of work that's been worked on over the last 4 to 5 years. What we wanted to try to focus on is how can we use that as a foundation and talk about the expression of some of these elements, what it would actually look like in a clinical data source. And clinical data source as a definition, we originally just started with the idea it's an EHR system. But it starts to expand out very broadly once you start to think about what could potentially be queried. The idea of querying it directly in EHR system obviously has some serious repercussions for people when they consider that idea. So the idea was you might not be actually querying an EHR system. You might be querying information that was extracted from that system. So much of the information here is information that you would see as part of various clinical data sources that are available. We developed this with the focus on the clinician, but with implementers to try to make it implementable. And we also focused on standards and dependence. So the idea wasn't to create a data dictionary that would force somebody to use a certain approach for implementation, but to say what are some existing data sources that are already out there, like I2B2, like HQuery, and like PopMedNet, where they use different data models currently, and try to align as quickly as possible to those to create more of a standards agnostic approach. Next slide. One of the things we did as part of this is we said, how can we ensure that all the work we do is closely aligned to QDM 3.0? There was discussion about literally making QDM implementable. And when I say that, what I mean is when you read the QDM, it has a lot of information in it about QDM categories, about QDM data elements, about QDM states. And what we focused on initially was just how can we align things like the NQF vocabularies that have been defined for many of the specific measures and as part of aligning to these categories. How can we align that to what we're describing in our data dictionary? Same thing with some of the QDM data elements and some of the states. We started a discussion about that, and quickly became apparent that it's difficult at times to describe state within a clinical data dictionary. Very difficult to do. You need more than just tables, you need models, you need some very specific guidance. There's a lot of ambiguity to that. So it definitely represented a challenge up front, but we started with the idea if we can at least align categories to the CEDD, that gives us a starting point to begin to do more and more of that work. Next slide. Now, what I'm getting into here now is the HQMF and QRDA aspects that we want to discuss. And what was done was we worked on HQMF as that base format. There it is. It exists right now for quality measurement. What can we do to improve it? Focus on the need for more dynamic population queries, so making queries more executable, making the language more executable. There was a strong push to make it simplified and readable. It's not greened. It doesn't look necessarily like green CDA, if any of you are familiar with that format. But the idea was to make a lot of the tagging more understandable to a human reader so that it could get there. It's not there yet, but it could slowly move towards that. We didn't want to create a new standard. We wanted to say we want to leverage the existing infrastructure that's already in place for quality measure reporting and try to use that for a different purpose itself. And we wanted that to work across different platforms and basically promote the use of HQMF as the standard to use for not just quality measure reporting, but also for distributed queries. But with the idea that it's one standard, and we can also support SQL, we can support JavaScript, we can support other approaches. And then finally, we focused on the idea that we can improve adoption of NQF e-measures if we can take the lead in trying to push for improvements in HQMF. Now, I don't think it's speaking out of turn to say there always has been this pushback that HQMF has some challenges to it, that it can't do it all. And we recognize that. We don't want to push HQMF as the ultimate answer. You know, part of the discussion here is going to be focused on what are the alternatives? What can we do with HQMF over time? You know, Floyd has mentioned a great idea of using it as potentially a wrapper, not to make it so focused on, and you'll see when we talk about it, focus on so much the content piece, but more wrapping that content. HMMF could serve that purpose. We did not, what we commonly refer to as de-RIMify. It's still based on the RIM. Just because it has a more simplified readability, we're hiding a lot of the RIM-based aspects of HMMF behind that. So that was the real benefit that we saw in using HMMF. And then if we go to the next slide, this was an example that I came up with of just talking about some of the complexities when we talk about XML schemas and the readability in this side and the modeling of that. And what we focused on was XML can be a little difficult to read, so let's focus on how can we make it a little more readable. Let's go to the next slide. The major changes were these additions of business names to the criteria and to the section elements, the inclusion of variables, which now allow reuse of definitions within HTML. The addition of preconditioned conjunctions directly within a distributed query. Created a list of all those changes. If we go to the next slide. And then we said HTML is just the actual query format. So we're changing one aspect, which is we're sending. What about what we receive? So the receiving piece has been also somewhat of a challenge because, as some of you are very much aware, the QRDA Category 1, at least right now, is much more well-defined than Category 2 and 3. And distributed queries, one of the scopes we had was to not focus on the reporting of patient-level information. So the primary use is population-level querying, so you take a population, you report on that. There are situations under Category 2 where we can report some information that may have already been pseudonymized to return that result as well, but there would be some potential patient identifying information as part of that that's already been pseudonymized. So our focus was on actually creating, really, Category 2 and 3. There's a DSTU for it, there's a standard, but taking it beyond what's out there now and actually working through this initiative to make it more robust. With the caveat that we need to align that as closely as possible with the needs of CMS and MQF and CDC and other organizations that may be considering this for their use. Next slide. Now, that gets us to the point of discussion for this meeting, which is our ideas behind making HMF and QRDA more modular, make it easier to program, make it easier to use, making it a source of authority for queries, and how we get feedback to NQF on results of our piloting of that. The push right now is to get this balloted through HL7 sometime in the September to December timeframe, depending, again, on the consensus feedback that we would receive from that organization, from NQF, from other organizations. So it's intended to be an initial starting point where we lay down a foundation, and then we can start to make changes to that foundation. We do not start with the initial belief that it's the best way to do it, because I can say up front, having done a lot of the HQMF improvements myself, it's not easy to do, and HQMF is still not there yet. So that's part of the discussion we wanted to have, and then also testing the use of QDM as that possible model for clinical data to be queried, because for us, it's now included in meaningful use stage 2. We want to push it forward even more as a potentially implementable model, but it's going to need a lot of guidance and a lot of work to do that. So part of that work will perhaps come from ONC, part of that will perhaps come from NQF, but we need to talk about what exactly is involved to make that a reality. I think that's all I had. Boy, did you have anything you wanted to discuss at this point either?
The thing I'd like to say is I think this is a terrific kind of intro for this discussion. When the QDM, originally called the Quality Data Set, originally just a list of elements for measures, was developed, started in 2007, and started out very similar to your CEDD comments, and that was, if I were to look at common measures, it started out with 81 high-priority measures, what are the common elements? And it was meds, it was procedures, it was demographics, many of the things you have in there. And that was seen, and I'll make a comment that it was seen as relatively flat. It's still flat. I don't mean to say it's more three-dimensional yet,
but it was basically a set of information, which meant this information exists, I want to find it, I want to know is the EHR the authoritative source, and is it valid if I use those data. Then it was a matter of moving forward to say, well, what else do we really need around measurement? And what we identified, because partly there's a need and partly because that's how we're used to measuring, we need to know some context. I don't know that the patient's on a medication if I can't trust an active med list without knowing it was either ordered or dispensed. So there's context around it. How do I know that? And if I only know it's dispensed, I still don't know if they're really taking it unless the patient tells me that it's active when I reconcile. So how far down the road of knowing about the med, using that example, do I need to be to make that measure valuable? And that's where context comes into play. So we started to address that, but recognizing that's not a easy thing for EHRs to say, well, where would I keep that? And it depends on EHR workflow. So that was part of what we started to address, and our concept was if we could say each of those in what we used as an NQF term, data type, not the HL7 term of data type, it's a different meaning, that we said med administered or we said med dispensed, that if the EHR knows where that's stored, if I had so many people in the room, 10, 15 people, and I had each had a different EHR, each one might store it slightly differently in a different place, but if they knew that, anytime they see med administered, they know where to go and find it, and then they have to look for, is this med there? Is it not there? And that's the value set. So that was the intent of the QDS, which became QDM, of the data types combined with the value set that makes it an element. We've moved to many requests for want more information. So we're getting from the quality community, here's what we need. But that's kind of outstripped the capability of how do I make this happen in EHR. So I kind of see similar efforts, and the query health effort is starting because of trying to develop those basic queries back where we were thinking in 2007, not to say that's old stuff, it's just that's basic, and then how do we move forward? So I think it's a good way to look, and what I'll be presenting is a bit about the QDM. What I'd like you to think about as I go through that is to think out of the box, because I don't want to be quoted as I don't like HQMF. Jacob Ryder, who's now at ONC, and I were active working on it through what was a collaborative for performance measure integration with EHRs that the AMA, NCQA, and the EHRA sponsored. And so this is kind of an extension of that to see how this has worked. And it was Jacob who actually coined the term HQMF and the acronym. So it's not the kind of history that, yes, there's value. I think there may be, but maybe it's not alone. So maybe you can describe some criteria. So I'm going to report out, I need the criteria described one way so I know how to calculate to fill in the currently valid QRDA level 3, category 3. How do I report it out? But I need the criteria. But perhaps some of that is outside the request for data, and could it be a different animal than HQMF? I'm not trying to create extra pieces, but let's think about what does this need to be? Do we have to make the one thing the big thing, or is it pieces?
Yeah, I think historically, just to give everybody some context around this, when we originally started this, well, it was even before I started at the AMA, so over 5 years ago, there was this thought of automated measures being imported, I'll use the word literally imported into your system, that you could map everything to, you could write some sort of application that would process the measure and generate queries in your system. That was sort of the concept, and that's sort of kind of how this all evolved. So you think about where we're at today, it kind of makes sense that we're at this XML piece that could potentially be processed into sections. You could map those sections into bits and pieces that would be queries and things like that. Now, retrospectively, was that the best approach? Maybe not, but 5 years ago it seemed like a really good idea at the time. And, you know, so that's sort of that context behind of why we're at where we're at is because, you know, I think the goal is still to make this easier and make it more implementable and make these easier to implement and make any sort of system that would write some sort of aggregation or importer or query model, whatever it may be, to allow them to do that and not have intervention by a human. But the fact of the matter is there are software development life cycles that go on. Nobody's going to automatically import a measure and export a query out without some business analyst taking a look at it. I mean, there are processes around it that really, I think, also need to be a part of this conversation is what do people need to as part of that technical documentation set to actually get it into their system.
Yeah, so just to add to that, I think what I'm hearing is there are a number of pieces here. One is, which hasn't been mentioned here, but I heard it partly in Farzad's discussion and in Kate's and this morning. We have had a mindset of the kinds of data we've been able to capture, and we've been asking for it because that's the data we know we can get in order to manage about quality. So if we're really thinking from here forward, what data do we really want and do we need, and is it available, and how do we make it available? Some of the context that we've been asking for before may not be necessary. So rather than making it complex and fitting every, it's like fitting in the paper record in the EHR, it's the same model. It's not. We have to reconfigure that too. But how do we put it into something that could be queryable if the EHR is not using the same information model? It's not a direct one-on-one, one-for-one. So that's really where some of this discussion is. We really want to open the box and think out of it. And so what do we really want to do? We have these components. Some may be useful. Some may be throw them away. And I'll try not to be quoted too much on what might be thrown away or what might not. I just think it's important to open up that discussion. So we can have a few comments, and then I'll give the other piece to help you think about what we're really, some of the challenges we're dealing with in the current structure.
So a specific question, and then a comment before you answer the question. So I've worked with Rick sort of when you started all this. Are you planning to implement a HTML compiler or prove that HTML is sort of a valid expression that actually returns queries in a finite amount of time like SQL does? So that's the question.
Sure.
And then the comment is to expand on what Floyd just said. I think the good news is that both HQMS and QDM are underspecified right now to get us to that point, so that's not leading. But then, of course, the bad news is it's underspecified, so we still have a lot more work to do, but there's all these other things that we still need to think about. So that's sort of the short version.
Sure. Well, to answer the question, we have a compiler. We have translators we've developed, and what those translators do is they allow the translation from HQMS, the new format we've specified, to other formats, so that if an organization decides, I don't want to use HQMF, I want to use a different format, you can always do translation from HQMF to SQL, HQMF to JavaScript, HQMF to other formats as well, creating an opportunity to start to create that glide path out of just thinking about HQMF alone as the solution to potentially provide other types of solutions beyond HQMF itself. Because I just want to stress that I don't want to come across as I like HQMF. I actually really don't. I don't think it's the best format to use. I pretty much would say I'm on board with the idea that a new format or standard would probably be preferable. It becomes more an issue of who does it and in what time frame can that potentially be delivered. Certainly, you probably are aware, new standards take a long time to be developed and require a lot of community input. So we are being asked to create something in an extremely quick time frame, and that creation ends up being, we end up reusing something that already exists, perhaps for a purpose that might not be originally intended for, and make the best do that we can with what we have.
You know, there's a risk. So HQMF is a model built by people who like envision this framework, right, for expressing measures.
Mm-hmm.
If you get 10 different people to then say, okay, the command would be, your goal would be to have the framework, then you have a different model, and what we're trying to do is trying to do HKMF, and here's another model, groups of people that are redefining the model, and you're going to have the same faith when you implement that, because your model would be esoteric from the people who do not understand your model. Then there might be a need for another group of people to develop the model so it would be simple, quote-unquote. They're going to have to define the model again, and then when we implement it to the rest, then it's going to be esoteric again. So, you know, I can understand that because, you know. So somehow, at some point, we have to come up with a singular model. You know, let's say we talk English, then we'll do English because that's the framework where we're going to, you know, do. So and this is just more of a comment more than anything. So as we frame a different model, i.e., you know, CEDD or something, that would have the same risk as HKMF before, because, you know, we did that in, or you guys did that in the performance improvement in the EHR collaborative, then it morphed into HKMF. So like, that's redefining another model, right? And then another group of individuals would then say, okay, well, that model I don't understand. Maybe this model would be much, much better. It would actually be the same, potentially would suffer the same fate, I would say, just because, you know, it's yet another model. You know, all models are wrong, right? We only have to focus on one and say, you know what, yes, I mean, I think that will be the model, regardless of its fault. You know, somehow as we move this forward, we have to come up with one and then just deal with it, because otherwise, then that's how, you know, different models are out there, and it's hard to implement. So you have ICD-9, ICD-10, SNOMED, you know, LOINC. You know, I'm seeing one source here for race and gender, which is HL7, the other one CDC. You know, it's yet different models and people, the way people think.
The same, they just happen.
Yeah.
HL7 supported CDC.
Right, right. So
then there's OMB, that's another
one. Yeah, OMB is the right one.
Right, right. 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 Well, you might end up having, right, right. So perhaps a strategy moving forward, like if CED would be the right one, that we should like stick with it until, you know, everyone gets adopted.
Well, and so my comment to that is, it's true. You'll keep chasing model after model unless you just work with something, expand it, break it where it needs to break, and fix it. Unless it's so broken you really do need to start over, which can happen. But that's one reason why when I look at CEDD, I kind of see a replication of the effort that went on with QDM. Mm-hmm. So why are we starting over again? Why don't we use what we have and say, here's what QDM is, it needs to grow. We can start with this piece, which you're now calling CEDD, and that's how I see it. But then how do we make the whole thing grow? Rather than starting over each time, I think that raises a question.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
So the secret sauce in all this is nothing to do with the model. It's who creates the most usable tool set,
yes,
and then you're done. And so that's actually the secret sauce that technically should actually take note of. I've been doing this 15 years now, or now I'm getting older, maybe 20, but if you look at the AI wars, knowledge representation wars in the early 90s, so the knowledge representation language that won out between all the sort of major competitors to do inferencing, which is, you know, this is sort of like halfway there. It's not fully there compared to big AI, like the sort of 90s vision, if you're talking about ambitious older goals. But in the end, you know, it wasn't KQML, it wasn't KREP. KREP had some. So there were sort of five or six sort of contenders. Some of them were actually logically more powerful and more expressive. Some of them had more math proving that they were computable. But the ones that finally won out were either the ones that got the biggest grant by government fiat, like Grail in the UK, to just do the NHS system, or the ones that had the most usable open source tool set, like Protégé. Even though, as one of the sort of creators of that, I knew it was sort of, I mean, you could see that it was much more cramped and crippled compared to the expressivity of sort of the next knowledge representation system across the hall. And so that's actually the sort of lesson learned. So the prize to chase is actually those two things. And as long as sort of everybody gets along, you know, on the sort of rest of the list, that's fine. I mean, that's essentially what will actually get us a win.
And what Grail did that was effective is it set the floor. Grail said that this is these are the criteria
that you must meet, the minimum
knowledge application that you must meet in order to do this. And then it allowed you to build up and build up and build up. As long as you met those minimum criteria, it could interoperate with other knowledge systems, but it had to be built on these minimum data sets for all intents and purposes. And that's it. And it was built around, really built around use cases. How can we use it to do what we need to do? And building back to that pragmatic, it wasn't about how much math can we throw in it, how much money can we throw at it, but how pragmatic can it be? And using the money that the government has given to it, which is finite, even though they think it's infinite sometimes, that using that finite sum, how long can we grow this? And they set a plan for it that, if I recall properly, was like a 20-year plan. And it was built around use cases and minimum criteria.
I want to take this as a chance to check if there are any questions or comments on the phone from either Chris or Uzma.
Yeah, I actually do have a question. Specifically about the query health piece and how it fits in, and I feel as though I'm hearing a number of different things, and things that may not really harmonize very well with each other. I believe I heard. I'm afraid I didn't catch the name of the speaker. A woman who was speaking and said that the intention of the HQMF may not be to create executable code any longer. Did I hear that?
I don't know if it is or if it isn't. I mean, that was the original intent, was that it could be written, there could be code that was written to consume it.
Yes.
Right, and I think with that intent was we knew there might be several steps to get to that.
Right.
Right.
But didn't you say, though, that you felt that even if technologically it was possible to do something like that from a workflow standpoint, and I'm just trying to clarify
right.
what I heard.
Right, so from a workflow perspective, right, I don't think there's any vendor out there that's going to say, here's a measure, automatically consume it, automatically start generating queries, and make it available to their customer. That's never going to happen. There is a whole business process that sits on top of that. Before you would ever make any sort of feature or report available, there is quality assurance that happens. There is, you know, making sure that you can capture the data and that the data that you actually capture at the point of care or after the point of care actually would match the report. There's this whole business analytics process. Is it even valuable to put into the system? What are you know, they would be looking at the evidence and the guidelines and saying, does it match? Is there clinical decision support that needs to be associated to it that's not from the measure? So there's a whole business process that sits around quality measurement that's just not, let's create an executable piece of code or an HQMF that can be consumed by an application and then be run against the data in the system.
I concur with that. That is a terribly naive assumption. Nobody who actually owns a system is going to say, oh, yeah. Sign me up. Just give it to me and I'll plug it in.
And
that never happened.
And I would even say, even as newer releases of the measures come out, so you may have version 1.1, 1.2, 1.3 with value sets that are being, there's going to be a validation process that's going to happen at the business level to validate that they're accurate and correct and implementable within their system.
Right.
Yeah. And that they're not error-free.
Yeah, and the goal of HQMF is not to allow those things to happen and standardize those things, right? The fact that you have a standardized HQMF, then it'll be targets of decision support,
right.
targets of those business
right.
processes, which is outside the HQML.
Sure.
Okay, I appreciate that. That's
yeah.
what I thought I heard you saying. I wanted to make sure that I was hearing that correctly. In terms of query health, you know, Floyd, you know that I was at the meeting, the SNI meeting, the face-to-face a couple weeks ago, and I thought what I was hearing in that meeting were a couple of different things in relation to the presentation that we just saw. One was that there is a measure 59, that's being focused on as a prototype. My understanding from the meeting was that Quarry Health, as an organization, was not really going to focus on any of the other measures, particularly measures that have some more complexity to them, because it's really not in their main track. I do think that puts that approach at a little bit of a disadvantage in that it doesn't handle a lot of constructs that are part of those NQF measures that are not found in Measure 59. And, you know, examples of that are the ratio measures and the continuous variable measures. And there are certainly several other examples. And I also felt like I heard at that meeting that there wouldn't be a tremendous amount of focus on those kinds of constructs because they weren't really in the Quarry Health purview. I also felt that I heard, well, I did hear on Friday in one of the meetings that the balloting that was going to be done was going to be specifically done for Quarry Health needs and wouldn't necessarily consider the full spectrum of what the e-measure needs might be from HQMF and QRDA. And I was just interested in, you know, is there this dissonance, is it something that just exists, or am I misunderstanding what's going on with these things? I welcome comments on any of that.
Sure. I think that's a very good question. I'll try. It sounds like there's multiple questions there, so I'll try to answer them as I understand them. First of all, it is correct that we use NQF 59 as a prototype. What we also tried to do was create other prototypes of other measures and to test those using HQMF. And the determination was made pretty quickly that even with a rebuilt schema that was focusing on things like including variables and changing criteria that now have business names, that's not enough to get to the point of being able to do more complex queries using HQMF. So the thought was, if we expand out a little further beyond measures like NQF 59 to other types of measures and do that by looking closely at the QDM and some of the other categories within the QDM as the basis for that, we could actually use that as kind of a testing ground to say, okay, these types of queries cannot be supported using HQMF. That comes really at the direction of ONC because what they would like to see is, okay, it's almost like saying, prove to us that it can't work. And that's the step to really prove it, is to say, okay, even with an improved schema, here are still the major challenges that we would encounter using HQMF. With the caveat then becoming, somebody is going to have to either make even further improvements to HQMF, or we then need to open up that discussion for consideration of other types of languages, other types of or a new standard being created to do that.
Right, but the comment there is essentially that, I mean, the sense that I got was that this would not be something that the Quarry Health group would focus on as far as moving beyond this Measure 59. I mean, they may at some point say, we can't handle the more complicated constructs, and these are the things that we can't deal with our modifications, and we're not going to focus on making that work.
Yeah. Now, we did get direction after the face-to-face meeting that we should focus on beyond 59 because that was kind of an open question. What we did was we created a query catalog that was looking at other measures, breaking them down into, okay, what is the specific data that's needed to support these measures? How could they be represented using HQMF? We also took a look at the ACO measures as well that have been proposed to use those as a potential testing point. But our determination was it's just way too much work for any initiative to take on. Now, what ONC directed us to do after the face-to-face was, while they recognized the scope is very, very large to take on that type of challenge, they wanted us to pick some specific measures to test against and basically document some of the areas where we feel that the HQMF, even the updated schema, cannot support these more complex measures or queries, to be able to put that information together within the next month so that that can be presented to the standards committee, that it can be presented to others, to then make more determination about if that's not the answer, should we continue down this path or should we start to think about a potential new path. I did want to get to your kind of your other point, which I believe was more just related to the balloting issues. And the balloting issues are essentially this. We set out a timeline where we told HL7, we'll do this initiative, we'll make changes to HQMF, we'll use this upcoming May meeting to bring forward those changes and to ask the Structured Documents Working Group within HL7, okay, what do you think of the approach that we've taken? What do you think of the ideas that are in here, their execution of those ideas? What changes would you recommend? Is the approach on the right path or not? We called it a prototype approach, where we said we would do the work to create the new HQMF, with the caveat of you need to then tell us, is it the right path or not, or should we consider alternatives? So that is the intent on the May meeting. The idea with the September-December meetings were if they tell us that it's the right approach, it needs more work, we would then prepare for that time frame for balloting with some pretty exhaustive review with a lot of different organizations and individuals to see if we can get them on board or not. They say it's not the right approach. The intent would then be to have a discussion at the Standards Committee probably in May about what we need to then do as further steps beyond that, whether we need to consider a December ballot, we need more time, or whether we're just not going to use HQMF and we're going to consider alternatives at that time.
All right. So what I'd like to do is, this is a good discussion. I'd like to move to the next presentation so then we can get to the full discussion. And as I go through this is dealing with the QDM and some challenges in representation. Perhaps what we should think about, you can move to the next slide. This is just background on NQF. I don't know that I need to go through all the details here. It's
on the slide.
Standard slide. Okay, so just as I go through this, think about this concept of HQMS was created, most of it is around a proportion measure. I mean, there's some discussion about ratio and continuous variable, and in expressing them, we found issues. Farzad had a comment this morning. He said, well, with all this complexity, and these are difficult and they're hard, and he looked in, and I'm looking at you, Floyd. So that was an interesting comment, but for anyone who thinks a measure is easy, it isn't.
Just haven't worked with it.
And for anyone, and I'm not saying this as a response to Farzad for his comment, he knows they're hard and there's complexity. But I don't think there was clear understanding when the process started how complex measures were. They look simple when you look at the description and numerator and denominator until you identify what you need to do to really get the data, how you have to massage it, analyze it, what works, what doesn't work, what's included, what's not. Nobody intended to create issues of exclusion, but frankly, that's how the measures were identified in many respects, and the answer was just take exactly as it is and put it in the computer. I think we've proven that doesn't work. But if we think about the HQMF in its structure, it has numerator, denominator, exclusion, exception, maybe we need to think about, and I'll use a term that I hear Mayo use often, is phenotype. I want to know this set of patients with these characteristics. Now, that phenotype might be a denominator, it might be a numerator, it might be an exception. I want to know this type of patient. That's basically what each of those sections is. So if we think about it, then how can we just create a phenotype? And then, that's not simple, I understand. But how can we then move those into this? So what's the data model we're talking about with QDM? We started out with simple things. I just want to know an allergy. I want to know med. I want to know an encounter occurred. What I really want to know is there's been an interaction between a healthcare provider and a patient, or maybe
a community provider that takes care of, in a community-based organization, a patient's care. That's what the intent as we've moved forward in what we want to know for population-based measures. And I'm not saying that population-based measures, all data has to come out of the EHR. Much of it may not be in the EHR. But what are the data that we're trying to get? Those are the categories. They've modified a bit as we've tried to describe them in better ways based on comment. So it's adverse effect that might include an allergy or might include a non-allergic effect, and I need a causative agent. But in our first iteration, it was allergy. That's it. Well, what if I don't want to know only type 1 hypersensitivity about the causative agent? So the way to be able to express that, we went to adverse effect to say, what effect are you looking for? And then about what? So that's the category. But then I need to know the state. In what context am I looking for? So in some respects, some of those states maybe ought to not be considered and retired because they're based on an old paradigm of measurement where I had an abstractor able to tell me that. And now we should just look for what we know. Because when I think about Query Health, they're looking at the med. If it's there, it's there. If there's a lab and there's a result, it's there. I don't care if it was ordered or not. If it was ordered and it's not there, it's not there. So do we need the order? And that's a question back to measure development. How important are these states? And I'm not trying to disparage. I think some are and some are not.
Right. It depends on the measure because some are process measures that the order is more important than.
And how important is process measure? Right. So is decline really important? And I know there'll be a lot of discussion, but I'm not trying to answer the question today. I just want to put on the table. We need community decision of how important is that, or do we know that everyone has a rate of patients that don't comply and things that don't fit? How do we deal with that?
Right. The other piece, too, is the way the perspective, right? So, our ONC chief said, population measure is important, but it's also important for the doctor that is taking care of the patient at that particular time. How can I consider population health given this?
Right.
So far as perspective would be population always, extracting, but not from the measure itself as it applies to that patient, to me as a physician, meaning patient-level data that can trigger decision support about that patient at that visit at that time. That's really the most important thing versus the population health because that's where the trench is. So
two comments. One is I had a discussion with folks yesterday at some other company yesterday about population health. And I said, wow, you really understand population health. And my comment was, as a practitioner, as a doctor, I saw my patients as my population, and I want to know how well I'm doing for them. Mm-hmm. And most doctors do. The problem is, who's your patient is one of the questions. And how do you know that? But if we just move to outcomes, then we don't have a lot to support for decision support. We need some leading process indicators, and I agree. The question is really on the table is not to answer it today, but what states are really important? What context? And also, what attributes are important? How important is it to know? And again, I don't want to create a firestorm of emails. We have one yesterday about terminology for ethnicity, and I'm not going to get into that anymore. They're still going on among HHS. But anyway,
well, that's interesting. You ought to look at the 2 years we spent on that in the family health portrait.
Yeah.
For 2 years, 23 agencies worked on that question.
Well, they'll never stop answering that question. I understand. But so if I want to know patient-reported outcomes, and Mary over here is the patient, is it important to know that she filled in the PHQ-9 depression scale, or that Delaine, as the nurse, and I'm giving you all new roles, filled it in talking to her? Because she's interpreting as she fills it in. So if it's really important, then the actor of the source or actually performer of the task is important. And if it's important to the measures, that's why it's in the attribute. But EHRs don't actually persist that with the data as they go along. The provenance isn't there.
But that goes back to the assumption that you're assuming that what's important to the clinician is necessarily important to the people looking at the measures. And I will tell you that from a clinical standpoint, when you exclude amputees from skin breakdown measures, they're the population that DOD cares about a whole lot because we don't see it in the others. We only see it in them.
Right.
Really, I mean, less than 1% of anybody who isn't an amputee is going to have skin breakdown in our military health system.
Right.
So telling me to exclude all them because you only care about the ones who don't have that condition makes it worthless to me, because how am I going to improve less than 1%?
Right. No,
I mean, how could I possibly get a 33% improvement in that? Just don't even go there.
So you're defining, someone else might say it's an exclusion. That's an inclusion criteria for you.
Right. That's what I care about, and you threw it away.
No, I agree. So let's just, this was, the model was, what are the information components you need if you really want to say this?
Well, one of the things that I think is missing even in the example you just gave is that there should be a structure. There should be some structure methodology in there as well, some measures, because in order to identify whether the QDM, I mean whether the PHQ-9, thank you, was properly delivered, you have to identify, was the person who delivered it properly trained. That's a structure method or measure, and that's an important structure measure to identify whether the process measure is valid, to identify whether the outcome means something.
Mm-hmm.
So there have to be, I mean, you know, I'm sorry to bring Dr. Donavedian back in, but we've got to have all three types of measures in order to know that that outcome is valid. If you've got somebody that, you know, came into the hospital with a compression fracture to the skull and left the hospital alert-oriented and able to do his job, but he never got anesthesia during the entire time that he was treated and never got pain control during the entire time he was treated, we have a great outcome.
Mm-hmm.
The process and the structure that led to that outcome is absolutely inadequate, and we don't have adequate methods of measuring those structures at all. The processes that we have are a little on the weak side, and the outcome measures are not broad enough.
Okay, so I'm not going to be presenting these here, but we had an expert panel at NQF, another HHS-funded effort, looking at how to measure effective use of the EHR, basically. That was our health utilization expert panel, a technology framework. And they addressed a lot of that issue. If you want to know, this is the person with the right privilege or credential to do what needs to be done. There's a missing piece in the process to be able to manage that. And so we could say use NUCC to identify all credentialed providers or types of providers, or is it SNOMED or is it HL7? That's one piece. But you're talking about people who are, quote, privileged because they have been trained, and that's considered a local thing, but in many respects, what is the structure that's needed to happen so that you can say it was provided, the source was from a credentialed person.
Right.
Actually, I've had some questions about that, and one of the HHS contractors asked, we have a consulting hour, we try to hear what they're listening to at NQF and provide suggestions. And my answer is, you could say, if you could identify the right credentials using the source, and the recommendation was source should change to performer. And it may make sense, or whatever the word is in HL7 that's used for that. But there's no standard to capture and maintain that, so how implementable is it today? But that seems to be a need, and we're hearing that not just here, elsewhere. So what we're finding is we have this complex set of requirements, which I think is what the QDM gives us.
But what you just said kind of goes back to the fact that not everything you need in the EHR.
Right.
Credentialing and privileging stuff isn't, and the privileging
stuff
exists.
But it exists.
It does exist, but that's also protected information. Credentials you might make available, but the privileging stuff is internal and hidden away. I'm not saying it shouldn't be brought into play. I'm just saying you're just pointing out the complexity of it.
You can still anonymize and capture the information necessary to get that structure measure validated, to to show the data that that structure method measure is being captured.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not feasible to do. What I'm saying is, it's like everything we've talked about, is very complex.
Oh, yeah. So I
very
think
complex.
There are a couple things that I'm hearing, which is real. This is good. I didn't think this slide would get us that far, but this is really good because this is the kind of thing that I think is important to pick up. The QDM, as it is today, flat as it is, and needs to grow, I think provides requirements. And it's providing not a specific use case, but requirements from use cases that all that come in individually. And that creates the questions that we have to answer. So it's not inherently quickly implementable, but it's providing the requirements. And I heard some questions, okay, here's how I could implement this thing. So if it might be different in Kathleen's organization versus Daryl's, that's okay, but what is it that the measure query needs to contain, or how do we deal with that so that they know what they should do about it? And that's, I think, that's complicated. But I think that's what we might want to discuss, how do we deal
yeah.
with that.
Yeah, so there's two thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, no, just to reinforce that point, I think computer science-wise, not that I represent that community in any way, I'm actually do clinical quality, but the difference between a specification language and executable, like process language or computational language, is really important to mention here, and it may very well be that you never actually want a QDM compiler to exist, that staying close to English, simply allowing QDM to give you the opportunity to allow measure developers to achieve consensus by actually having a logically specific specification language that can be computable for validation of the actual definition, but is not computable to a specific model, as well as having the sort of identification of sort of the knowledge slots that are required to actually compute those, and as part of the specification, which is your data categories, then you're done. Now, if HQMF wants to be the heavy hitter engineered thingy that people like, you know, will actually implement in EHRs, that's fine. Nobody's done semi-structured national standards for like web-based semi-structured XML computed queries yet. There's Sparkle, SQL, OQL, all of that. Those are incipient efforts. They are well done when you're within a commercial website that data mines or, you know, that does shopping carts and stuff. It's not like the kind of consensus standard that we kind of try to achieve here in healthcare that's open source. And so it's a really tall order. The easy version would be just everybody just, you know, target SQL and do clinical repositories as your actual logical models for queries. And that's been done. It's validated by the SCMS. So, but the sort of on the fly, grab it from EHRs, it's been done for events. You know, identifying counts of things. It's really not been done for either proportions or ratios where you're actually aggregating the ratio itself in a distributed system. You know, Napster tried a little bit of that, but, you know, so we have some architecture of distributed system, but we don't have the answers where it's meaningful. So there's this big, you know, uncertain space for our standards development, and a lot of this is, in addition to standards development, really agreeing on what the task is. And so in that sense, I mean, it's really a sagacious decision, in my opinion, for Query Health. You know, they have sort of imperative kind of ballot because Duggan says I want that, but to just say we're not balloting past our own scope, and that's fine because there's like a much larger set of things to solve. So the other option of, you know, the other good news, bad news version is just to declare victory and then, you know, based on what you're already scoped to do, and then that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you have a comment? Then
yeah,
let me
I
just
do.
Finish this, and I'll give you some thoughts, because I kind of like where this is going.
Yeah. So I think one of the things about the QDM, and this is just sort of a reaction, is that So I work for a measure development organization. We develop measures, and we have come up with some unique ways to determine who treats a patient, for example. Two encounters, if you've seen the patient twice, you know, you should do these particular things. Well, now what happens if you're in the EHR and they have two encounters, even though you're not the primary treating physician, you may be picked up if you're looking through a whole entire data warehouse for that potential measure. So I think one of the things that needs to be done is sort of a look at the QDM or whatever data model to say what was possible yesterday through our measures and what do we need tomorrow to actually calculate, and do we need to change in some ways the methodology for how we determine, for example, attribution in our measures, because we did it the old way because we didn't have a way to do it. We do have a way to do attribution now in the EHR. I'm the physician that's treating my patient for diabetes, but if I'm just giving them their influenza shot, I'm not actively treating their diabetes. Why am I, you know, unless tagged for it, or I'd come up on, you know, a report somewhere because I get all the measures, right? So how do we address that? And I think those are some things when we start looking in the future, 3 to 5 years from now, when we start looking at measures that we're developing, it's really going to be attribution that we're going to be looking at, especially if you look at the continuum of care and you're treating a patient for an episode, not necessarily what they're coming in for.
So I'll just make a comment on the two things I just heard so I can finish these slides to show some of the issues we've identified. We've actually tried to explore with AMA, PCPI, with others, with CMS, so how could we actually say it's the same doctor? And we've actually explored, well, what if we use the national provider identifier list as a value set and you say it's the same one as the one who did it? And somebody said, don't ever do that because that's highly complex and it's got all kinds of stuff in it. And I really wonder if part of this we have to think about as we think about accountable care organizations and care by many individuals. It's not just the doc, it's not just the nurse, but who's managing this process? So I've got a team handling it, but who's managing this part of my care? I mean, that's part of project teams when you're doing business work. Whose is this and when's it due and when's it going to happen? We really need that whole workflow built into care in order for this to work. I'm not saying it's necessarily as detailed as a really detailed business process would be, but maybe it does need some of that because the patient wants to know, who's managing my diabetes? The patient thinks they know, but does the doctor think they know?
Well, and I was hopeful to point out that some things – you're exactly dead on when you say it takes a team, because there are some things that you may be the clinical provider for me and a patient, as a patient in a hospital, but I can tell you it's the nurse who manages my skin care. You, yes, as a physician, are never going to take care of my skin. It just won't happen.
Well,
so,
I have to tell you, I had a really bad bronchitis one year. Really bothersome. I saw the doctor 3 different times. I finally saw the nurse practitioner, who not only gave me an inhaler, but told me how to use it. And I said to her afterwards, thank you. I've never had a doctor tell me that. And I am a doctor. There are different things.
Well, you know, we're testing measure. I have a measure testing project right now where it's not only a physician that qualifies for the measure, but I had to look at the billing codes to see who qualified for the measure, because it's not physician, nurse, you know, the psychologist that's seeing the child, you know what I mean? It's like you have to go to the billing code to see who they apply, what the billing code applies for the encounters, which is totally backwards. And I'm like, and this is one of our measures, by the way. So, I mean, like, sort of in some ways backwards in saying,
yeah,
who does this measure apply to? When we get into query health, you're going to need to know if somebody put information into the chart and it's the nurse or somebody else, then it may not apply. And is that appropriate? Who can actually do the clinical documentation? Does it have to be from the physician? I mean, these issues become more complex as you start to think about it.
Is the practitioner functioning as, is it a PA functioning as under the physician's license? Is it a nurse practitioner functioning under the clinic? You know, who is providing that care that is identified with that NPI that's not really unique?
Right. Well, the ICD-10 is going to also change the future and our ability to deal with complexity
and the granularity of data.
But beyond even that, I just came back 2 weeks ago from a week-long face-to-face meeting in which we were trying to finalize, we want within DOD one standard for all medical surgical patients admitted to a hospital, one standard set of admission documents and one standard set of discharge documents and one standard set of how do you document the progress in between those two, and try and having, because MedSurg is a team, having the docs doing the provider stuff and the nurses doing the nurse stuff, and then having the discussion, how do we decide who collects which measures? Does it go on the doctor's form or the nurse's form, or does the nurse collect it but it flows into the doctor's form, or does the doctor sign for it, or does the nurse sign? I mean, all that is just at the front end of how do we even collect it, let alone attribute it. And I can tell you that at least three times we moved, we require people to do either a CAGE or an autopsy. We don't care which one or the other. But I can tell you three times we moved it out of the doctor's admission note, into the nurse's note, back into the doctor's note, out of that into the nurse's note, out of that back into the doctor's. Three times made that transition because we couldn't decide what the starting point was in that workflow.
Yeah, so this is actually a really rich discussion hearing this. So one thing it says to me is if we are going to measure, we really do need these attributes. These are not just get rid of those, let's just look for the data, because you're not going to be able to deal with how can I deal with decision support, to whom do I give the notification, to how do I deal with this. So it is important. I also kind of heard something that rings a clear bell for me. Is it really the XML and the computable? And I'm hearing two people here saying maybe it isn't that. Maybe it's a standard way to express what I need, and you figure out where it is in your system. And so maybe it's the human readable, which can be more human readable, I agree. Just so you know, in the HQMF, in the measure authoring tool, we have what we call a narrative generator. So when you've generated your XML, when you read the style sheet, you know that what's written there is what you said. And if it didn't come out the way you thought it would be, it's going to show up. That was purposeful. But do you really need the style sheet and the XML, or can you just say what you want to say and put it in some wrapper that always says it's a measure?
Well, that was what HL7 was intended to start the process for in the first place.
But we can look at the QDM that way. Let me just go through some examples, and then we can work toward lunch.
So, yeah, and I just want to say one of the things as a precursor when we had the first collaborative, we had a template that we were trying to develop that would help put a structure around, and I call them requirements because I come, like, it's the e-spec. It's the requirements for writing the XML, right? It's the requirements, right? You know, and I will say I have a lot of Devometer developers and e-specifiers that come to me and say, how do I do it? I'm like, use your words. I'm like a child. I'm like, use your words. Like, write down what you want. Just say what you want, and we can figure it out later on.
Right.
But just say what you want. And I think that we've sort of got away from that and gone to bits and pieces and bytes to make it processable. What we really want to do is say what we mean and then figure it out later.
Yeah. So now, that may not be inherently testable in this process. So perhaps what we don't want, and I'm not going to provide that, but this is kind of what I'm hearing, is maybe we don't want a EHR that is certified to do this. We want an EHR that can, or a system that can produce results based on the needed input, and that it's not an automated query.
So, but from a NIST perspective, we actually met with the ATCBs last year for stage one, talking about certification at the AMA. And interestingly, one of the things that they were very excited about was the Cypress project, which is a patient set that can be imported into an EHR and then an answer key and a set of use cases around patient data to say, you need to have this information in your system, and are you getting the right answers on the end? And I think that, you know, when you talk about having the process of the XML, there's the second piece, which is the quality assurance piece, and what do you need for quality assurance? And I think they're a little bit different.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but there's manual process in there to get it out, or to manage how your EHR deals with it, so that given a new patient, you get the right output.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me just go through again. Here's what the QDM does: is basically takes a category, its state of being, the state of action, adds the value set and the related attributes, and you create basically, I want to know, someone's been administered non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Now, that's probably in a hospital because you don't administer in the ambulatory world, so your setting is important. But that's basically, the QDM lets you say that. And I still think there's value in the value set because it says which ones are you talking about. So the QDM is intended to give you the way to say what you want to say. You still have to understand how you want to say it. So what are we finding? In simple arithmetic, what if I want to say the difference between two dates? I just want to know from admission to discharge. Well, with the HL7 model, the way we've been given to do it, I can't say A minus B. But I can say difference between dates. And I can tell you from admission to discharge or the second one was actually supposed to be arrival to discharge. The second admission should be arrival, the second example. But that I can do, although wouldn't it be easier just to say arrival to discharge time? So it looks a little more complex, and that was based on trying to fit it with the XML and the components that we could deal with. But that we could do. But what if I wanted to say that's arrival time versus departure time? So there's a low time and a high time in an HL7 message. But if the low time is admission in one instance and arrival in another, it's not the same thing. So how do I do that? So we developed a convention, which may not be the easiest way to do that. If you arrived, you arrived at the location related to the admission, so that the low time for the location was always, as the attribute, was always arrival. It was just a convention we used to be able to describe it. Love to have a simpler one. The other question with this is, on arrival in the hospital, who has the data? Where does it exist? If you're coming to the ED, and this is the measure developer side of it, I don't have an inpatient measure developer in the room, but I only have ambulatory ones. So
I'm working on it.
Okay, yeah. So you understand the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So when I come to the ED, there's a triage. And that triage gets my name and says what time I walked in the door. And then I get admitted later. So ED has an arrival time. It's actually in standard forms. But if I came as a direct admit and I happened to be in the parking lot, the example is if the EKG was done in the parking lot, that's my arrival time. Only an abstractor is going to be able to find that after combing through lots of stuff in the chart. EHRs don't have it. They'll have an admission time. So should we just give up on it if we're looking in EHRs? Is this something feasible?
But there are
or
data.
Does it make a difference, though? I mean,
when they're looking at 90 minutes from arrival, they want to know on the ground how soon you got there. It's within 60 or 90 minutes.
But what you're really asking then is the initial moment of delivery of care, which isn't any of those. When you're talking about what you're capturing or not capturing, that's not any of those.
The way we captured it, there are a couple. So for our clinical decision support work in the 90s and my own dissertation work, the way I captured that issue was I had process outcome but also audit data category. So in other words, that's where you pause and ask for a data point. So if, in fact, for, the one stroke measure, it really, or, cardiovascular, whatever, MI, it really matters that you really are keeping track of when they arrive, at the, catheterization suite or whatever it is, then you have, you have a measure to acquire that data as part of the, and then
so
you
the English
stop.
Readable could tell you, go do your extra.
And you have to, have a data gathering thing. We're going to measure you on data gathering as a sort of extra special thing. And that's where this idea of not holding your feet to the fire and being constrained by particular implementation requirements and flip side being agnostic to the architectural methods to solve your information gathering, whether it's registries or live EHRs or just web-based XML or the cloud EHR market, eClinical Works, whatever, blah, 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 HIEs. there's going to be a bunch of those, and actually some of them are all funded together, four at a time, by ONC.
Well, let me just go. This is good. Let me go to a couple more of these. They're going to bring in lunch and deliver them to those who ordered. If you have not ordered and still want a lunch, we'll give you a few minutes to find where you can go get one. So a couple other issues we found, continuous variables. We want to know the difference between or a median, a mean, and a count, and how do you say that? So we now have it in the authoring tool, but what does it mean when you go to count? So this is one, another one. I also want to know cumulative duration from the time the medicine's right, discharged from the hospital, was I on medication for at least 90 days? Well, it's a derived variable from the content of knowing the number of doses and the frequency, but it's not a specific element that I can ask for. So I can't say number of days. And I also know how many prescriptions. It could have been 3 30-day prescriptions. It could have been 1 90-day prescription. And trying to get all those permutations to explain was tough. So wouldn't it be a lot easier to say you've had medication that amount of time and find a way to calculate it?
Right, but then you're just assuming that because you prescribed it, A, it was dispensed, and B, it was ingested, and C, it was ingested the way that you ordered it to be ingested. And I can tell you patients can't even read the order on the bottle to know how to take it. When you say 1/2 and we tested and usability tested, the patients think that means 1 to 2 pills, and instead of taking half a pill, they're taking 1 to 2 pills. So there's a lot of assumptions bundled in that.
I was on the board with the Pharmacy Quality Alliance for about a year, and they were dealing with this, you know, is it the prescribed number that was actually filled? Was it the frequency of refill, or was it something else that determined the whether the patient was adherent to the drug? And frequently we found out in a comparison of medication on hand and medication filled that it was often neither. That there were times where patients would say, okay, well, the doc has ordered for me to get Nexium. And Nexium costs $93 a month, and I can get Prilosec, which is the same drug except for it's not esomeprazole, it's just omeprazole. I can get that over the counter for $42. And so I'm going to take that. So you don't get to capture either one because I'm not even taking the drug that you prescribed. But it's close enough, and it's giving me what I need. I feel good about it. And I talked to my doc's nurse on the phone about it when I called in, and she said, well, there's not that much of a difference, but didn't write it down. And there's just no way to capture these types of...
Okay, so this is good. This is somewhat a measure of content question,
right.
And I agree with that. What I can say is, this is the challenge of taking a measure designed for a claim-based environment where that was all they could capture and that's what's here. If we can get something more, it would be more beneficial, I think, to think about what's there. But up to me, I would want to know that you've had communication with the patient. They'll tell you what they're taking. But anyway, so let's just try to understand that what we're trying to say is how can we say what we want to say. And here's where there were challenges. You have good points about how do I know they're really taking it.
But I think the bottom line is, I don't know if anybody wouldn't argue, we need to move away from claims-based data into something that's closer to what we're really asking, because the claims do not tell a good story.
Right. So I think this is the next slide. So the thing that Farzad was talking about was warfarin. So, well, it's not the next, but we'll get to it in a minute. So I also want to know, did you... Fine. And did you choose one treatment over another? Right now, it's just I refuse to do this, patient reason, medical reason. But how do you really determine real preference as we move forward? How do we know the ordinality? It might be the principal procedure. Right now, it's in a hospital's principal procedure because that's a required field for claim. But how do I know that's a discharge? So when I came into the hospital, was I treated right based on what my presumptive principal diagnosis was then?
Especially when it changes many times.
Right. So how do practice doesn't give me that information. There's no standard there. So are we looking for the right information? Patient experience, is it just, it's not just satisfaction, but what was my experience with this treatment? Did I get a good outcome or a bad outcome?
Well,
these are the kinds of things we probably want to look at.
And that depends on whose goals and how did you capture it.
That's great.
Your goals as a provider are not necessarily the same as
so
my goals
what
as a patient.
Was, who is the actor who defined the goal and how? That's why we have the attribute. This is just some of the examples, other linkages. I want to know there's weight loss. I just want to say weight at this point minus weight at that point. I can't do that because HL7's structure in HQMF doesn't let me, and the RIM doesn't let me, unless I put in something more complicated called Jell-O, is what they're recommending to me, which adds more complexity. So rolling the eyes is perfect.
Well, you can't do it on a panel of patients either. I mean, this is a ratio
right.
You want it on them.
Right. So,
right.
Says
we have obesity
about that.
As a national epidemic, but we can't even tell you whether we're accurately tracking it or not.
Yeah, so what we did come up with, although it requires a dummy variable called weight delta 6 to 12 months, or weight delta, and you can say in what period of time, using a new loin code, but then derived from what? The weight at the first during the measurement period and the most recent, more than 6 months after. So we can at least state it to be able to say which two things you want to calculate from. So it was a way to try to get there. How do I get to know this is a care goal defined by the patient for the treatment I'm about to get? So we can say has goal of. I don't know how you implement that.
Yeah, so that's going to keep a cursor and an SQL system going for like 10,000 years. You need a temporal database to solve it.
For going through this is, I think, and Neil,
I'm seeing
your comment,
what's
if I can just say what I need, you know where to find it, but I need to say
it. Although it can't be so easy for you guys. You have to say it with respect to a validated set of data sources that you've agreed on. And so, in other words,
so what's that?
It has to be provably logically computable within a framework, but you don't actually have to specify the actual algorithm.
Right.
So
here's the other one that someone's working on now. This is the VA measure. I want to know how many days, what percent of time the patient is in therapeutic range, subtherapeutic range, and within therapeutic range, Rosendahl time. And that is based on a unknown number of INR tests for the patient on warfarin over the period of time. And at least they're only dealing with atrial fib because once you're started, you're on it for the rest of the year, so it's in a stop date, or shouldn't be. And so they're actually looking for the number of days within treatment, and there's a calculation to figure it out based on how far apart these results are. And VA does it really well because they do it out of their data warehouse and they figure it out. I'm not sure, one, how to even express it in an HQMF. I can't. But so what is it we would need to do to express that to tell any EHR in the room? How would you do that? And it sounds like a data warehouse function within an EHR. So if this is where we need to go, and this sounds terrific, but if this is where we need to go for measurement,
that's a whole different ballgame.
So,
well, that's reasoning, right? So that's why it involves inference. And
Right. So this is starting to think now we can go get our lunch, but I wanted you to start to think about that so we can then get to our discussion and start to look at what are the things we're looking for.
Does anyone know where we can find King Solomon? Because that's what we're going to need to get this figured out.
Well, actually, somebody asked me about Moses.
Well, it's very biblical here.
Did you say a Christian parable?
Does anyone need to go
query the oracle?
So, Floyd, when will we reconvene?
We have, it's now 20 after 12, so should we reconvene in 15 minutes? We're just going to pull lunch together and have a working
How many people have to leave to get lunch is the question, really. Because if we're all here, 10 minutes is fine.
Well, we could try.
Folks on the phone might have to leave their offices to get lunch, too. Let's give them an opportunity
to
weigh in.
15 minutes, and then we can come back. 12:40?
12:40, fine.
Thanks.
Okay, that's fine. We'll pick back up then.
Actually, we didn't get comments.
We'll try to do that
now.
You have some very verbal people in the room, Floyd. So.
I actually like the discussion. I like the idea.
Hi.
Yes.
Hello?
Oh, you're still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just breaking for lunch. Do you have a question?
No. The phone kicked out for a second. I wasn't hearing anything else, so I thought I lost you. We got to reconvene at 12:45?
12:40.
Yeah. 12:40. Okay,
hold on.
Great.
Unmute in the meantime so you don't hear the background chat.
This has got to be the same. What you want them to do. Does that make this not an e-measure? Because I may not know that.
It's going to come from someplace other than your EHR.
Yeah, but does that make the QDM element source non-constrained, that they can't use that if they do?
What do you care about, though? Do you care about where we got it from, or do you care that
they
have it? Valid, vetted information?
That's my platform. That's my soapbox.
QDM is saying, I need the source. It's not telling you where it has to come from. But if you're telling me, since the EHR doesn't have it, I should constrain and not let them use source, they can't say what they want to say. How do I deal with that? Well, there's a pragmatic piece you have to include, is you have to know, you have to be able to reach out and get the data. Mm-hmm. If the data isn't in the EHR, and the data can't be captured by the EHR, then you've either got to do one of two things. Exclude those data, or capture it from a different source.
Right.
And you can actually require the submitting body to capture it from that different source and support that source. I mean, like, State of Maryland has MEAMS data, which tells you where and when a patient was picked up by an ambulance or a helicopter. Those data are captured. They're excellent data. They're not put into the EHR, but that is the first opportunity for care. So maybe there could be a requirement to Maryland hospitals that you have to capture the MEAMS data, because they do capture it. They just don't include it in the EHR. So I'm just trying to understand. So it's okay for them to say that as a criterion to measure, but if ONC for MU2 says that's not required to be in the EHR and everything must be, then you wouldn't use a measure like that in MU2, but it's still a valid measure. Is that what I'm hearing? I still think it's a valid measure, and I also think there's an MU3 and an MU4 coming down the road that could require. So then you wouldn't constrain the QDM description of those elements. You would constrain which measures get into the program.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I'm just trying to understand. There's a difference here, because I'm hearing constrain it so no one develops some measure that has anything else in it.
No, I don't think that's going to serve us well.
And that's the same thing going back to the Apple computer apps model, that just because you don't need it doesn't mean it isn't being created. Before I moved to D.C., I didn't need the D.C. Metro app on my phone. But somebody made it because somebody needed it. You know, Kathleen's got a situation where she's got skin breakdown issues on amputees that are 1% of the population. That doesn't mean that we don't capture that data. It just means that only her organization needs to pull that app in.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that having a model that says, you know, the gauge of the Dom train is X number of inches, and your car's got to be this wide to fit on the train, is a criterion that makes sense. And then have people build anything they want, so long as it meets those minimum data elements.
Okay. I mean, I'd rather have fewer and a minimum data set, but fully understand what that means, than have a whole bunch of stuff and have questions about every single thing, because that's what we spend all our time doing, is having debates about, when they said this, did they mean this or that?
Right.
We could do this, but we could do it this way or this way or this way. I mean, how many hours have I spent in discussions about that? I need something that helps me not spend time there.
And a minimum data set doesn't mean that that's all you're allowed to capture.
It just means you're doing that the same way.
Right. And we've got so many examples just around us right here of minimum data sets. I mean, just, you know, minimum criteria, the 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. you know, there are so many different standards out there that are not national standards. They're just adopted standards because they make sense.
So how do you define a minimal data set on something that has different context and different attributes? Does it restrain each of those?
So this is something that I've kind of kicked around a lot, just as through a couple projects, is do you come up with sort of these domain models for information that you need? So you would have sort of like your very basic information about a person would be a domain. So you have, you know, all your social, you know, things like that. And then you would have everything that you would need to collect potentially with diabetes. And it has relationships built in as well, because I think that's one of the things that we're always missing is sort of like what information is related to other information when you get into these table structures as opposed to what I consider to like a UML model of something. And then you can build on those. So like the models, so like an oncology or any sort of cancer treatment that you would collect data for would have to fit also within the diabetic model. You know, so you kind of build onto these so it continues to branch out. And then you constrain it, too. You can then constrain. But it's always, it's sort of like a expand and contract. But so that way you have these models that people can use, and it also makes it a little more implementable. I think one of the feedback, things of feedback that I always get is, how would I create my quality data subset? Because no one's directly querying their EHR. They're always putting either into some set of additional tables, and then they need to know how to actually set those tables up, right? What are the relationships in the table? What does the schema look like? What are the constraints? What indexes do I need to create?
Or something like
all
that.
Those different types of things, right? Mm-hmm. But somebody still needs to do it.
Right.
And but how do they do it? And can you make it easier for them?
But the effective thing that they do, and what I do when I'm pulling data in from disparate sources for a research study, is you build the use case, and you decide, how am I going to use it? What are the elements that I need to define what this is? And then anything else is superfluous. That doesn't mean you can't build it. It just means I don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
And having that, and that's my minimum data set. That's my use case that sets my minimum data set. Having an established use case that, you know, we've got 8 use cases for this, and this is the minimum criteria that have to meet that use case. And then you can build anything else you want so that Kathleen can capture skin breakdown on amputees when I really never see an amputee.
Right, you don't care, but that's okay.
But we both meet the minimum data set. You have extensions that make sense to you. I have extensions that make sense to me. There's no constriction. There's just a minimization of what must be there.
I mean, when you ask the question, what do you mean by a minimum data set? I mean, what are the core data elements that upon which are the foundation of the queries you have?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're doing it anyway. I mean,
right.
You're wrong if you think that we're not already pulling data sets out of our EHRs. We are doing that right now. We're just all doing it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to make DOD and VA match up where it makes sense for things like medications. I mean, that's tractable. I can deal with medications. We know what it takes to order a med, so we know what those fields are. But if I want to present that information to a patient, do you know how many ways there are to present that information to a patient? I can give them the Latin SIG for it. They can't read it. They can't interpret it. I can give them an expanded SIG, but if I truncate it at so many characters, they only get half the message. They don't get the full thing, and they make mistakes in what they're doing because they don't have the rest of the information they need. So, I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road is, you tell me what you want. I'll give it to you, but you have to do it as these are the core elements of what you need to put together, and this is the outcome I'm looking for. I need a context for, you know, when you say I need a number, I got numbers, I got lots of numbers. Which one of them do you want?
And that's where that minimum criteria gets set. You tell us which ones you want, we build the rest that we need.
So here's where I'm trying to understand. The minimum data set to me is I need to know about all my patients. In your case, who have had amputations, I need to know different things in your case. And I have a minimum data set. But with the QDM, until I have all the elements defined within it for potentially all of healthcare, is really just a way of expressing. So if I know a patient who is an amputee, that's either a diagnosis or someone who's had a procedure called amputation. So in the QDM, then it's important to know procedure and diagnosis.
and when it occurred. And I might need to know laterality, because I want to know, is it right and left, or just right or just left?
Right, which ICD-10 will help with that.
Right, mm-hmm. but so in QDM, you want to be able to define that so you know what to expect.
Actually, let's go one step further, and because there's already well-established terminology for minimum data set. We've got, you know, minimum data set has a definition. What we're actually looking for QDM and for these purposes is a minimum reporting set. We're not looking for the minimum data that can be captured. We're looking for the minimum data that must be reported.
I thought I was looking for the types of data in the QDM that are reportable or capturable as opposed to the types that aren't, because the set will grow or change. But minimum data set, as I understand, and this is where I need you to help me here, is specific elements that are important. But if I need you to have context about them, and I need anything else, how would I describe it? It's how you describe it that the QDM is trying to get to.
We didn't check. Are the people online back with us?
Well, actually, that's true. This is awesome. Shall we bring them back online, guys?
They're on. If they're in their offices, they're online.
I didn't know it was off mute. Okay.
The screen.
All right, so we've heard a bit of what is the QDM, and so let's do a roundtable and decide, talk about, so what are some of these issues and where do we go now?
Well, can you go back to the slide that shows the QDM structure?
Mm-hmm.
That'll work.
Right. So that's slide 22. Okay. For the people on the back.
This is over the web, too. So people
I didn't know. Okay.
Right, but they may or may not be looking.
Sure.
Depending on where they're at. Mm-hmm.
So then, what? Re-ask your question again, please. Of course, I said that right as you put it. So when I think of the minimum data set, it's I want to know all your diagnoses. I want to know all your meds, for instance. But do I need to know your inactive diagnoses, the things you've had that might re-exacerbate, or the things that you've resolved that you've had hepatitis B in the past and you're immune because you're surface antibody positive? And that's a condition that I know you've resolved. That's what QDM lets you say. And it lets you say a lot of things. So how do we apply the minimum data set concept to the QDM? That's what I'm trying to understand. Because I did hear where you may need to know in an order, who ordered it or who performed a procedure, and that's important to you, and their level of credentialing. And so it's there, but maybe not in your minimum set. How do I determine? So I call that minimum set or level one, what's absolutely necessary. Now, ONC would look at that as that's what I would require in an EHR. So if that's where we go, that's the interpretation it's going to have.
Well, with something like what you just mentioned about hepatitis, if I'm a 56-year-old male that drinks four alcoholic beverages a day, the fact that I had hepatitis back in my 30s is a lot more important than if I'm a 35-year-old female that doesn't drink at all, has a very healthy lifestyle, is at the right weight. The EHR to determine whether that needs to be included. That's for the provider to determine. And so having that use case determined, set up so that it gives the provider the opportunity to say, yes, this old history of hepatitis is important, or no, this history of hepatitis is not important, is, I think, part of what would be in that use case and ultimately what would be in that data set is the opportunity to choose whether it's important to have it reported.
So I would make a case that of the 113 measures we were asked to retool with 18 measure developers in 2010, defined use cases of required information. Whether or not it was information that, given the HR platform, should have been sought or not sought, I count them as 113 use cases. And so that's what drove how deep it needs to go. Now, what's minimum data set and what's not, I'm trying to figure out these levels. So in one case, it's one thing, but if we start from scratch and start building, we're going to end up with very much the same thing as we move along. So how do we go from here to there is what I'm looking for.
So this is the same thing that happened with the PCAST report. There was a tension between expressivity and data liquidity. That's sort of the two buzzwords they use now, or we use, I guess. But and the whole Farzad minimum data set started with flu reporting, 5 data elements from New York State Department of Public Health, like 4 years ago. And that the whole purpose there was like this liquidity purpose of, you know, what is it that we can minimize the burden of reporting so we get really fast flow for the pandemic. And so there's that imperative. And then the other side is, you know, you don't want the tail wagging the dog, just like Farzad said, you know, his other principle, which is you don't want the fact that you're limited by specific things that you decided you could measure, and then you define quality measures on top of that. You want to be able to sort of define your quality measures as you need them for value-based care, and then derive what the actual data elements are. So there's no right answer between them. Unless there's a mandate to use the word minimum data set, I would just stay away from using that word, because by appealing to that word, you automatically just position yourself on that other extreme of data liquidity, which isn't a bad thing. It's just that it's one extreme, and you won't satisfy your other goals. So is there an actual mandate to use minimum data set?
We're just talking about the concept.
And that's why I was actually talking about getting away from that phrase, because that concept does have a definition.
Right.
And I was just using that term just to express that it is a minimum set of data that must be used to express something.
Why don't we just, so one possibility would be to just say validated set of data requirements or something like that. So we have to kind of decide, you know, you guys, you're running programs, but, you know, what you're really staking your kind of position on and what is just not red herrings to get in the way. And so this minimum data set thing is one of the red herrings that I don't think is sort of core to our...
Yeah, so one of the things that I think would be really important is to understand from the measures we have today that are probably, and meaningful uses probably, or PQ... We can't use the PQRS stuff because a lot of it's claims unless we use the HR component of it, but I think it still uses CPT2 codes, is what data is actually captured within the HR right now. And from a vendor perspective, what are their minimum data sets, right? So, like, when you hit the install button and that schema gets generated, what's actually captured, and then what needs to be customized to capture the information, right? Because there's two levels, right? You then potentially create a workflow form that we need to capture it. And is there a differentiation between those two? And then do you put categories or levels? Do you have measures that have levels? So, like, when you go through, there's, like, a cover sheet that says this measure meets the minimum data set and uses whatever it is. You know, you'll probably need to do customization. You know, like, so you can categorize what it takes to get it implemented. Because I think that's the true issue, is what is the implementation step that really needs to be taken for somebody to take a look at?
The thing I hear from that, though, is that we have a bit of the tail wagging the dog in that case, because you're saying, what does the EHR capture?
They capture not, what they think people want.
Right.
That's what they capture.
What ought the EHR capture?
But that's what I'm saying. So, like, wouldn't prescribe it. We would tell them what they would need to do. So it would actually there would be information that would say, you know, if you came up with a core data set or whatever it would be, you could say this measure has the core data set in it plus this additional information. So this is what you'll also need to capture. You know, and then, or it may not. It may be very simple and easy, you know, because I think one of the things from, like, especially a small practice setting is they don't have an exhaustive IT department that can implement measures for them. They just don't. So it's usually the practice manager sitting down with the IT guy or their vendor to say, well, what can we get? What do you have? Things like that, as opposed to, you know, they're not Kaiser who has a full IT staff, you know, that can do all this stuff. So I think, you know, there's sort of the practicality of it and how do you dice it up. And the question is it really, is a core data set being driven off of a fundamental government requirement for an EHR certification program, or is it something else?
Well, if you go back to the Apple model again, there's nothing, they didn't actually have a core certification set per se. They said in order for it to run, it's got to do this. It's not really core criteria. It's just that if you want this thing to work, you've got to be able to meet X and Y and Z. If it meets X and Y but not Z, you can still make it, but it won't work on an Apple. So that would be ultimately setting those core criteria, but not really mandating it in any kind of law or regulation or rule, but just saying, you know, if you want it to run, it's got to do this. The way that we capture data at the bedside, it should be driven from the way that we capture the patient's needs at the bedside, the way that we do the assessment. And the process of capturing those in electronic form should follow that function. It shouldn't be the other way around. And so basically setting up, you know, picking these 113 use cases and walking through them to see if they actually make sense in context of how you as a physician are going to assess your patient, document that assessment, and then look back later in 5 years later and say, oh, that's what I did. That's the definition of qualities, when you can go back and say, that's what I did, and I can go back and say, that's what they did.
Well, yeah, and that gets back to the question of a lot of these measures. It's not one person capturing all the pieces of the measures. I mean, they come from different areas, which goes back, I think, in part to your question.
So the existing measures does not take into consideration the data workflow or the life cycle of the data, right? It assumes that one has assembled it already. And when you implement that, it's actually multiple actors.
Yeah, it's multiple actors in life.
Well, that's because if you look at the way that we capture data now, it's based on how we capture data in paper charts. It was intended for one person to use at one time to capture this one episode of care, possibly to save it for the next episode of care, and for somebody who sits in an office in the back with thick glasses to read through it and decide, you know, whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, or set them up for a risk.
Yeah.
So the paradigm of capturing data really has a workflow associated with it that is different now.
Right. We don't do it that way.
We don't do it that way.
No, we used to have the 6-page ICU flow sheet.
Right.
And now we've got an EHR that doesn't really equate to those 6 pages. I mean, it's very different, which is okay. I mean, it's not a bad thing, but it is a very different.
It's just a different framework. So I would think like the e-measures or the e-specified measures, rather than translating them from the existing paradigm to the new paradigm, might need to change. Like, you know, should we actually have new measures that are workflow specific, you know, to the person that you want to improve?
If that matters, I mean, it depends on what you're trying to capture, which gets me back to the conversations I constantly have, which is, well, what were they really interested in? Because we can't tell. We can't tell from what you've given us what it was you were really going after here.
Mm-hmm. I do want to throw something out there, kind of related to the things you guys just said. How is this minimum requirements for an EHR, how is that different than the the certification criteria of a certified EHR? So how does it relate to that?
Are the CEHRT criteria based on my workflow as a clinician, or are they based on what you need to capture in your system?
because if it's based
on... What I'm trying to do is build a workflow that, as a byproduct, captures what you tell me you need. I am not trying to build a workflow that's like a tax on top of the clinician delivering care, is to say, your first priority is to capture this quality data, and then your provision of care is secondary to that. That's the tail wagging the dog. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that.
That's what we're trying to avoid. So that's what I heard as hardwired measures based on the way they went out, and based on the way they got implemented more than going out. So what is the recommendation, and how do we move forward? We identified that as an issue. I don't think in this case we actually identified a best practice. We identified challenges, and how do we fix the challenges? So maybe what we need to do is list what are the challenges we identified and come up with ideas to how to fix them. Does that work?
Or at least start addressing them. I don't know that we can fix anything, but we have a different approach.
Direction of how to do it.
We know what isn't working. Yeah. I mean, that part we know.
I think we also have to start with another aspect is how much are we willing to invest, or how much are we willing to throw away from what we already have? Because if we're so strongly oriented and married to, for lack of a better term, the way things are done right now, then all of this figuring out the next step is going to be kind of worthless.
Well, no,
we're willing to say that we'll give up something, and we're willing to throw some things away, then I think this becomes a useful exercise.
But I think in reality, because of the amount of time it takes to change, because if you tell me today that I have to put in a system change request to change a system, I can tell you time for me to deliver that, 18 months minimum, and that's assuming everything goes perfectly. That's assuming I get the funding, I get the resources, I get through the processes. 18 months.
Okay.
So realistically, you're going to have a short, near-term, we can do this, and then long-term, in a perfect world, we're working towards this end. Because I can tell you that to get to those long-term things, if you want to throw out what we're doing today and go to a new way of doing it, 3 years. It'll be 3 years to get there.
So maybe we can think about three things here. One is, what are we trying to do? What's the goal? Two, what are the challenges with what's happened? And because we heard a lot of stuff already. And then, what is the next step recommendation? And we may not have a solution, but it can't be just tell ONC they have to do something, and we don't know what it is. So it has to be concrete. So if we think about where our goal is, I heard a lot around the table. What's the goal? What are we trying to do?
Well, I think the
somebody.
What we shouldn't ignore is the tremendous amount of challenges in just adoption of quality measures, consensus of what to measure, and just empowering the people who run healthcare systems to figure out what they should be measuring and how to use that, as opposed to just supplying the data around it. Because one of the so one extra sentence here before we get to the actual sentence version of this, but like sources are in our healthcare system, right? We have HIT, we've got an EHR, we've got quality measurement, but we also have quality improvement and care model development for patient-centered medical home. And, we collaborate with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, Don Berwick's previous organization before CMS. And one of the, cardinal sort of principles from that effort is you try to empower the local clinical directors, as much as possible. And so there's sort of this empowered internal loop to actually look at their own data. But, like, on a clinical policy national level, of course, we look at national data and, I run the analytics team, but what's more important, actually, is all the decisions on the clinical national policy level we have to make about what is it that we're asking those people to pay attention to, not what the individual answers are. They can compute that and manage their own cycle of improvement themselves using that those answers. It's really kind of defining what are the important questions that we're going to force them to ask, and then where we're going to mandate that they pay attention to their own answers for. So that's just as important an issue, and I think that translates on our plate into like a number of things that don't necessarily require us to kind of solve the rubber meets the road HIT data extraction problem. Just on the modeling side, just, you know, looking at the word modeling, quality data model, there's a bunch of things there. You know, do we have a tool set and a specification or expression language that allows us to immediately compare the specifications for two cardiovascular measures in million hearts and NQF and in PQRS and just sort of state what the relationship is between them? Did we invent a new measure? Do we know that we've already got a measure that already exists? Is there a way to look that up? Or when you're, you know, there's no tool set right now to do automated subsumption, right? So that's one. Forcing people not to create measures that don't already have at least a basic sort of data category. That's sort of halfway there. It's not the same as a full HTML compiler. But there's some sweet spot in there that is not tail wagging the dog, but at least we recognize it's an animal that sort of lives. And so that's, and I think we mentioned that already, so that's number two that I can brainstorm on. The process of creating measures is another element that there isn't really a good tool set. I mean, it's starting with the authoring tool. So those are the three, I mean, that I would say are still important. And, you know, that depth versus, so there's sort of like, you know, do you lead from the front or do you lead from the rear? There's the liquidity expressivity thing. There's the sort of semantic depth versus generality. Kind of, there's all these, you know, and all of those apply at the model level.
Okay, I just want to get some of what you said down here as we so we have things to talk about. You did mention a tool set to compare measures for common components. Can you
relationships between them, hierarchical relationships between, like even like risk adjustment or case adjustment of measures,
mm-hmm.
there isn't a tool set to say, okay, this measure is almost the same as that, but this one includes all these other exceptions that are sort of part of the measure or composite measures. The relationship between stating a guideline and then deriving measures based on that to provably validate that the measures actually represent a pathway of care, or, you know, nursing or protocol and trials or guidelines of medicine, whatever the buzzword is.
So that's usually within the development methodology, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I just think, like, I know you have, like, the NCQA, like, we all base our measures off of clinical guidelines, you know, and we do mm-hmm. an analysis on gaps in care and, you know, clinical research that's been done. So, like, we would never actually get past our cycles for, at least from the AMA to get approved, and then even, particularly if it's endorsed, it has to go through your criteria as well. So I always think, if you've made it to NQF, and it gets endorsed, you've gone through, like, almost, at least in our sense, almost a double, because it gets approved by the AMA PCPI, and then it gets endorsed by NQF. So we already have that, but I think maybe...
the harmonization process looks for these pieces.
Yes.
But I think Anil, what you're indicating is that's a manual process. And I think you're looking for tools that allow you to evaluate that electronically. So there's a better way to express that.
I mean, the best Boggs diagrams are from the AMA, from the, like, 1993 CMS, which is exactly that cycle.
Yeah.
And just off the record, I mean, it took me, like, 4 years to have Farzad believe that that cycle should exist. I mean, when he was in New York, he was just sort of like, I don't need to worry about the quality measures. Today he was like, oh, there's decision support.
So, wait, there were a few myths, though, in what you talked about. See, an electronic tool set.
Yep.
To compare measures for common components, hierarchical relationship between them, risk adjustments, example.
Well, so what would be the long list of things OCSQ really needs? Like, just instead of Farzad's list, Kate's list. What is Kate's list? That's the question, right? I mean, so she's got a bunch of docs, and they're busy publishing and creating all these measures. Like,
so you really want a robust patient level information versus the aggregate, which is... Oh,
well, if you have robust patient-level data, you can build the aggregate.
Right, but you have to have the source to get it.
Right, mm-hmm. But you can't go the other way around.
The other way around, you can't do that.
Right.
I mean, I recognize the term, but what you're saying is somewhat analogous to minimum data. What do I need minimum about these patients?
That was the second thing. The first thing was just if you have a e-measure model, a logical model of a quality measure, suddenly you can compute against that model with respect to sort of a lot of properties, including relationship with other quality measures. The, you know, just everything in Grail, right, all that description logic, that could all apply. I mean, you could just adopt Grail for a QDM. And,
really, you could.
There, so, you know, that would be... maybe thing, it's open source.
But the thing about Grail is that, you know, it is what you have to do, not necessarily from Grail, is there's got to be that capture at the point of care that's got to be included. There we can't even consider the option of sending somebody into a room and pulling out the pieces that need to be pulled out. If it's not capturable at the point of care, it's not a quality measure that matters.
But so I think
well,
what I'm
saying.
No,
okay,
no, no. What I'm saying though is
there's many points of care. So that's the problem.
What are you talking about? Workflow.
Workflow.
Consider workflow. Consider workflow.
Yeah. There's many points of care, and when people use the point of care, they mean the sort of clinic. Sort of event.
But what I mean is, you can't have to hire somebody else
to stand there and watch and capture.
In my interpretation, data required for measurement as a goal are captured at some point in the usual workflow.
Right.
Usual
right.
care,
that,
right.
That works.
Care process.
The other problem I have with care is I want to think about the patient and is that care if the patient's entering their own data. So usual health.
The whole problematic.
Health data.
Episode of.
I think it should be just. Quality is, because the thing is, you can have active surveillance, like, and so public health, it isn't true. I mean, you have active surveillance programs, and
sure.
The whole NCQA sort of methodology of sampling-based chart reviews is not at the point, I mean, that's sort of an, and the sort of general strategy of kind of using technology to give us methods to reconcile this kind of active surveillance, you go and seek the answer with clean data, coming out of it versus the sort of raw data that's sort of just automatically generated as clinical operations. The country really hasn't figured out how to meld those two, and that's a big project. Like that's has elements of this, but a bunch of other things too.
Well, I think what I'm really hearing is the EHRs are developed more on the model of use, and measures are thinking model of meaning of data.
Yes.
And we're getting this clash because model of use was not to enter it for meaning.
Right.
The meaning was determined by a human brain filter as opposed to the HR, and now you're expecting the HR to do it. So that creates some dissonance because now I need structured data where I never thought about it before.
Right.
And is the doc the right person to do it? Because it all falls on the doc and the nurse. And is that right? So I think that's what we're hearing. But the goal is the data required are captured, perhaps structured at some point in the usual health data workflow.
Mm-hmm.
But not in a checkbox format. I mean, I don't want my physician going to see my daughter and comparing her to a bunch of checkboxes to decide if she's healthy. And I don't want the system to force that to happen. But at the same time, there should be a way to capture the actual clinical evaluation that physician is doing on her in a way that's meaningful later.
Okay, let me just... ask the question, though. I think what you're saying is not an attestation checkbox format, except there are certain cognitive processes you need to ask about.
There may be attestation,
no
right?
So something like, I reconciled the med list. I can't mm-hmm. compute that. And
right.
if you
are
think
you
it's important, I have to right. checkbox.
Well, that's
how many drinks okay. do you have per week? Or your
well, well, but I think what you're trying to say is, what we need to know, don't tell me, do you collect it as a checkbox? Tell me, I need, like the CAGE. We had this huge discussion, the CAGE and the audit C. There's four questions mm-hmm. in each, whichever one you use, which is why we give them that opportunity. There was no clear body of literature, so one was better than the other. It's just a screening tool. So we just want them to screen. So the doc said, well, if all you want me to do is screen, then why can't I have a checkbox that says I screened the patient? We said, well, because they say you have to use a vetted instrument. He said, fine, you made a checkbox that says CAGE applied. I'll check it and I'll be done. I said, well, I don't think that meets the intent. And they said, well, then go ask the Joint Commission what they really had in mind when they said we were gonna screen, because I just want to know, is that one box that says I did a screen with no results, no comment on what I found, or do they care about how I got there? What do they want to know?
See, that's where the measure's driving the practice. That's the measure. That's the measure saying, the physician saying, if I want to get this, then I've got to do that, and they're telling me what I've got to do. And I don't think
right.
that's the intent that we've got here. The intent is that for you as the physician, the nurse practitioner, the provider, giving the best care, and are you capturing it in a way that I, the analyst, later can look at it and say, wow, great job.
Right, because what they're saying is, tell me what I have to do to get credit for the work I do. I'm doing the work, so just tell me how to package it in such a way you'll give me credit for it. That's what I want to know.
So did I capture screening as a general, as an example of liquidity versus expressivity? Screening is a general concept, has less meaning than a validated instrument that provides consistent results. That you can say, this has meaning.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I said
I
checked a box.
It
doesn't
mean
it's not.
Right.
Sorry,
exactly.
I'm not looking at you because of your measures. I just, you're
right. We have five different screenings in our alcohol measure, so, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like pick one.
The hemoglobin A1C value is better than if I check the box that I check the hemoglobin.
Per day.
But, well, so to say that my
month or whatever,
child 0 to 6 months mother has been assessed for depression, it's a checkbox. But to say that I have a, maybe a checkbox, but a checklist that includes mom's PHQ-9 score.
Right.
Right.
It has a different meaning because that means I know she's really been screened and I see a score and I can suggest something for
her. Yeah, but DOD, I mean, we've been around that battle. DOD wants to not only know that they've been screened for depression, but we have a vested interest in knowing if they have any intent to harm themselves or harm others.
Right.
That is an issue for us.
Well, that's
because they're more than capable of it, folks. They just are.
So my question is then, isn't that a validated instrument to know you asked the right question? Right, as opposed to, are you suicidal?
Right.
We just got really specific
about our wording of what we wanted to find out in our screening for that. I mean, we do use a standardized instrument. We have one additional question at the bottom of it that's ours.
So it's standardized for you.
But that instrument has a score.
Yes.
And that score is associated with that instrument's name. So entering that score with that instrument does a higher level than a checkbox, but works within the workflow.
Right.
Well, but if everything is an instrument, then we get pushback that you got too many things for me to fill out.
But not everything is.
Not everything
is. I mean, there
is,
are certain
but
things.
But we're saying where it makes sense, because this is all caveated by where it makes sense.
I mean, there are certain things
You may notice that I'm trying to get some things that we can present at 2:30.
Right.
But I'm trying to glean from what you're saying what is the goal, what are our challenges. This is good. I want to capture that. People on the phone, too, by the way.
Yep. You can't capture my gut. There's no way you can capture that, but you can capture aspects that actually make sense, that are, you know, there are places where text boxes are appropriate. But there shouldn't be as many as there are because there are – I mean, if we all did the same – those of us who are providers did the same assessment of the same patient and put it all into a text box, we'd all write different things, but they'd all have very similar elements among them. And there are ways to capture those elements. And that's with I can't think of the terminology, but where you have preformed text, where, you know, drop-down boxes, things like that that say, did you capture this?
Well,
it's not a great – it's not a great way to do it, but it's better than text, and it's much better than a checkbox.
But that's what DOD and VA did. VA spent 2 years and came up with 60,000 terms and said, when you describe some physiologic aspect of a human being, use these choices, whatever you're trying to describe. And so when DOD said, we're going to use standardized admission and discharge notes, we said, wherever it makes sense, to the extent possible, we're going to use the same choices the VA did. You know, so now you've got all DOD and all VA hospitals using the same descriptions, even though VA has three different vendors for their EHRs. DOD has one. But, you know, now you've got three different vendors, but you still have the same terms captured every time in the same context every time.
And those three vendors are required to meet that minimum set.
They're told, the vendors are told, you can have anything you want off of this list of 60,000 terms, but if you want something outside of this list, you have to come back and go through a governance process. We'll do it, but you have to go through a governance process in order for us to do it.
Right. And you're capturing that very accurately, by the way, Floyd.
I want to make sure I'm trying to...
At least from my perspective.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm trying to say, is this what I heard?
Generalizing.
Right. It's better.
I had just two thoughts in all of this conversation. One is I'm a minimalist, but I actually have a lot of thoughts because at NCQA we've been changing people's behavior for 20 years by saying
trying to say
this is your measure, and we find that vendors modify their systems to collect the data, and practitioners find other sources to collect data, and the small guys, despite Farzad's 6 point, they kind of get they disappear because the market drives the need. But the two things is more specifically for this is that we're running into copyright issues with standardized tools,
yes,
and results,
that's huge.
So you can't ask EHR vendors to absorb them into their products necessarily. And the other thing is that in all of this, I'm hearing that no physician is going to start memorizing SNOMED code. So all of this is all going to get translated eventually. So whether it's a checkbox or a text box or something else, it's all going to be translated in the back end to a SNOMED code.
Right.
So,
but it's
going
to be visible to the provider.
But that's where the inference engine that Floyd wrote up on the screen, he picked it right up. It's an inference engine.
Yeah.
It's taking that pretext as much as you can and converting it into something that my computer can read.
Right.
And report in SNOMED.
Right.
So I think what you're saying is that if the measure requires a SNOMED term and then it's implemented in a four-physician practice in rural, in Missouri, for instance, who's going to help that practice to map it to that SNOMED term?
Right. So how's somebody in Arkansas
going to know how to do
this?
That.
SNOMED code and somebody else in California. I mean, that's a whole other discussion
more of a
workforce
issue.
If you think a measure is really important, and you have here's the data model, the quality data model elements that can feed into that measure, people will adapt systems to it. What I'm also afraid of, and I'll just throw this out because I've been hearing a lot of talk about this in new measure development, is they should start looking for things in specific places in the charts, which scares me to death.
If it's quicker to document using a flow sheet, but you'll only look at a note.
Yeah.
So now I have to pull it out of the flow sheet into the note so that it will be where you're looking for it, even though it's not where I collect it. You really want to go there?
Yeah, I don't, but I think measures develop.
Yeah.
So give a little example of what you mean. Like specific specialties are saying you can only find this in the chart, so we want to go to the chart, or they're
we want to make sure that we had it marked 3 times on the float, on the face sheet, and you know it didn't.
Oh, I see. Just as quality strategy to make sure it's charted.
Yeah, I didn't want to throw
the EHR world hasn't caught up with that type of annotation.
But I would stay away from that.
Mandate.
Yeah, we're trying to stay away from being overly prescriptive because
then
you don't allow people to do the things that work and make sense for them. I mean, you'll make them moribund. They won't be able to do anything.
So what that's an example of is the evolution of the actual chart itself, right? So now we happen to have a paper chart that you can write over the front page, you know, 3 times. But maybe in the future, 20 years from now, you might have some sort of annotation function in the EHR. But I think the point for quality measurement on that is, you know, there will be evolution in the technology of EHR. And maybe everything will be an image and all the information will be, like, on that part of the body. I mean, who knows, like, what they'll come up with, right, 30 years from now. So whereas the quality reporting kind of element is sort of like an intentional thing, sort of measurement on top of that. And so there really is a distinction between the sort of model for quality reporting and the model of the EHR itself. And like you just said, we don't want to overly prescribe. You don't want to overly prescribe and constrain the technology.
Right.
And, you know, right now, if HQMS, you know, is a connector thing between the two current versions of that, that's fine. That would evolve over time. But,
I think we can come around to this. There's a difference between our workflow and what we're capturing and our reports and how we're reporting stuff out. And we can do translations, but if you start prescribing how I capture things in my workflow, then you're telling me I can't fix my workflow to improve? That's counterproductive, isn't it? That's not what you were going after, I'm sure.
Not to mention the fact that you can't have a workaround workflow to document something if there's a defect in your system, which is the one thing that, you know, that happens all the time, right? You know, the field doesn't work. It doesn't. The checkbox doesn't say for whatever reason, so I put it here in the note instead.
Right.
Because I didn't have any other way.
You're starting to practice to the rule instead of ruling to the practice.
Right.
I think there's, you know, that's a very good point. I have a two-step model. The one model is for developing EHR, which is quite comprehensive. On the other side, you have a quality measure domain analysis model, which should be equivalent as comprehensive as the EHR models, then they should match to each other. You know, this quality model should never, you know, intervene, or, I mean, they should have overlaps, and it should be the EHR vendor's responsibility to look at the quality measures model and cover all the attributes.
Right.
Essentially.
But we should never really get into the workflow.
I mean, just stay out of this.
And what that allows is that the cost of measurement has to be absorbed in the transactional sort of, you know, turnover in healthcare. And if, in ironically, if for standards, you know, so this is like a Doug Prisma type comment, but basically if you prescribe too much literally, then you're not allowing those measurement costs to be externalized and just sort of absorbed in the sort of general overhead of billing, which actually makes you sort of stop in your tracks, because, like, nobody can actually absorb that cost. Unless you have, like, a federal program where CMS, you know, gives you money just for doing the measurement, which is sort of there with the EHR incentives. That's the only place it is. After that, it stops.
Right, and so, then it goes away.
And so right now, you know, I think as a long-term strategy, it is important to separately maintain measure development and separately maintain EHR model development, and let the private sector do a value-add, charge-up kind of reimbursement, you know, charge-back model to actually produce the data.
Actually, you know, each EHR vendor, when they develop the EMR or EHR, they should have their own model, information models, how to design the data. You know, how to design the database and match to the, you know, data layer and whatever. So they should have their own model, and each one use their own. So they may have a lot of overlaps, and they may reference HR7 or others, you know. But, you know, just let them do what they want, they're good at. I mean, they may have a lot of interactions with the physician, you know, and users, what do you need, and, you know, how I mean, they lay all this data on the screen, you know.
But in order for them to do that, we have to get to a much more granular level of specificity in what you're looking for, because I cannot tell you the hours we spend discussing how to get from the high-level measure that you hand me down to the I can implement this and actually do something with it level. That takes a huge amount of time, effort, and energy.
Yeah, and I think that gets into the e-specification, or what I call the requirements, the e-specification component of it, right? So there's like the e-measure, which is, or the data, the query, so to speak, and then there's the measure, and then there's this intermittent layer of trying to really get at what you really need.
Yeah.
And I think when we talk about one of the things that we've developed an authoring tool, and NQF has developed an authoring tool, but it's really the intent of that was to export an XML document. And I think it provided some structure and guidance on how to create an e-specification, but it doesn't do the work on creating a value set, identifying what the data is in the value set. Are you really looking for all the codes, just some of the codes? What type of diabetic patients are you looking
that's
for? All the various different types of things. And I think that's one of the things that sort of that missing layer is either that training and education and that structure around that process is that e-specification process. Because once you know what you're trying to get, it's the XML piece. We could probably, I would say,
we can figure out
the technical side.
Yeah.
You know, it's money, dollars, and time, right, and people to figure out the technical piece. But it's really figuring out that e-specification and all those components. That's really the hard part.
Okay. So I want to make sure I'm capturing things correctly, because I think I heard things that are a little bit kind of different. So I heard EHR and measure model development are appropriately different because they have different means, different intents,
different uses.
However, I also heard I can't get this implemented because the EHR was dealt with this way and I want other information. And to give decision support, I have to add additional pieces onto my EHR. So are there specific key elements that the EHR needs to do the same as measures so you can handle decision support? And so I don't want to use the term minimal data set, but how do you determine what are the essential components that do have to be structured and do have to be managed the same way? I mean, is there a way to describe that? Or is there no value in that?
That's where we can use HTML templates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's a living set. It's like a set of it's a collection of sets rather than a set of elements. And So as time evolves, and there's sort of natural evolution on both these sides, on the sort of measurement model quality data model as well as the EHR models, there'll always be a set of templates that are specific use cases per query where you can certify against a list, but they are sort of a living collection of sets as opposed to saying, we're going to like agree that both of these data models forever have this list of data elements, you know, that is sort of set in stone in 2012, and then it's good for like 12 years.
But I think there needs to be a little bit of a caveat to that in saying that the sets need to integrate together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you don't want to create a heart failure set and then a diabetic set, and they don't work the same way.
Right.
That's
so
true.
So you're collecting the diagnosis with different time date stamps, or you don't have, or you have a conflict in how time date stamping works on your diagnoses, for example. I would just say, like, you need consistency on how that actually gets captured and the attributes and filters that could be associated to that particular item or element.
Yeah, if you're going to capture, for example, something as complex as you want the delta between two date times, I don't care what you pick, but then do it the same way every time you're going to do that. You can tell me that it's now Y date time and Z date time, whereas in the first case it was A and B, but I'm doing it the same way every time. Just do that. That would make it tractable, and you'd actually know what you have. I mean, because that way you would at least know how to interpret what I gave you.
One other challenge that I see, so, you know, you talked about living standards, scalable and all that stuff. Right now, I think if we're HKMF is an HL7 standard, HL7 has its own cycle. If our demands for improving quality, hence the measure needs to adopt to that, would depend upon this little bottleneck, if you will, in terms of churning out new standards to meet whatever the implementation and certification. There's only very limited group of people that can actually help us go through the HL7 process. You know, Lantana is one, and others might be. That might be a challenge. And if so, how do we then engage with groups like HL7 to make sure that we are increasing the pipeline, widening that pipeline so that then it can respond to the changes that we have, so it won't be a constraint, meaning that you're not going to wait 6 months for the next ballot cycle or 12 months, you know, like Eric was saying, you know, to determine whether it's feasible or not feasible, rather than it's an ongoing churning thing as we move forward, as we change.
Or what, I guess, even beyond that is what should be the cycle change.
Right.
Because remember, if it's going to take me 18 months to implement and you're changing every 3 months, how many years behind will I be before I just throw up my hands and say I give up? Mm-hmm. I retreat. Because remember, you can make change as fast as you want, but when I'm moving the ship,
it doesn't turn
on a dime.
So there's obviously an advantage with a standards body, right, facilitating the standards, because if not, then it'll be, you know, you create your own standards and doesn't have any adoption to that. That's critical. But I think we should be looking at, you know, what is the process.
So the standards process is long, and then you have 18 months of implementation after the standard, assuming that it's...
Assuming it's a perfect
well,
world.
And now, you have your own system. So at TRICARE, you are the system and the delivery, in a sense. But if someone was buying a vendor, it has the vendor process followed by implementation, so there's even a third...
Yeah, so, you know, typically any software development cycle is going to be 24 months from the point of development to the implementation cycle.
Right, I'm just saying,
and that's just like a net.
You can't do better than 18 months, and then it's a two-year normal, and it's 3 years if you're trying to do an enterprise-wide deployment, because they don't all, it's not a light switch, they don't all flip at the same time.
Right, you do a pilot, too, you know, like, and that's 14 weeks to 18 weeks, and then analysis, I mean, like, that's a whole, like I said, there's this whole layer that we have to not ignore.
Well, that's where the lesson out of this seems to me two things. One, don't ask anything to be hardwired, because if you're hardwired, you've nailed it down to a technology that was existent at the time you came up with the idea, not the advancement that's taken place 3 years down the road. And number two is don't nail it down to a specific type of technology. Don't say it must be written in XML, because someday, you know, CatML might come out that works so much better, and we just finished putting it into XML, and now we can't convert it. So, you know, try to keep it agnostic to technology and try to keep it not hardwired.
But that's the advantage of the use cases, is as long as you give me enough information, no matter what I'm working with, I can make it work. But I have to have enough information so that what I'm doing matches up with what everybody else is doing. Because if you make it too loose, then we'll all do it, but you won't be able to compare anything.
But the standards have to be built around interoperability. I've got to be able to read. If your patient gets discharged from TRICARE and gets admitted to Union Memorial Hospital in Baltimore, I have to be able to read what you wrote.
Which kind of goes full cycle for that.
So a way to reconcile both of those statements, which is sort of, you know, you have to kind of work together, but then you don't want to commit too much, which is obviously attention, is to rephrase a little bit and say we want interoperability, we want backwards compatibility. Which is the sort of, you know, Android exists in like 7 versions, and most people have version 3 times, three versions ago. And the catch-up issue is not only there for, like, actually evolution in standards themselves, but even in the quality measures, like between stage 1 and stage 2, some of the drug categories have changed.
Yeah.
And by the time the proposed rule comes out, you know, like, we have to decide, okay, well, do we tell our physicians not to, like, give the most appropriate drug, you know, 18 months from now because, like, we couldn't comment, you know, fast enough on a rule that was, like, deadline, like, 4 months ago?
Well, that's going to happen with a final rule in October 2014, January, of course. So I'm trying to capture, and I'm typing as we go, that all of this is not necessarily what we want to present. You'll want to present. I need somebody who's going to do this, not me, during the final presentation. But I think what I'm hearing is, one, it's going back to our pre-lunch discussion. We talked after, evolve to standard templates for standard queries that can be used for quality measures and clinical decision support. So used among many quality measures. The sets that need to be based on the same infrastructure for consistency with our last statement based on standards for interoperability with backward compatibility, because you have to have some standard or you have nothing. And a health measure query should be based on such individual standard section. Now, I've heard others refer to this as phenotypes. So I want to say this is a section, and I might want to use this query for this kind of patient. Mm-hmm. And I might want to use all patients that meet this phenotype and this one and this one and this one as I build my measures.
Okay.
So we need a method to do that, but does that need to be in a XML structure based on some RIM pattern, or does it need to be based on English language with good definition for every component? Words that can be reused to make the statement.
That's the longer-term solution. If you give it English language and not tie it to technology, then as technology evolves, I can still do what you told me to do.
So you prefer the English language. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and if we're not going to be consuming the XML with a machine, what's the point of going through all that trouble?
I would state a little bit of a counterpoint to that. So I think it's important to connect it to English because you're actually solving a problem for humans to use. But I think there is a list of computable things that you can do with the XML without doing what HTMS is trying to do, which is sort of ask the question to a computer to get the QRDA answer. That was what I was trying to point to, is that other list is pinning people down when they're expressing the measure enough so that you can compute the relationship to other measures.
Well, I don't mind using the XML as an example, because that something concrete is perfect. But don't tell me that the only way I can do it is to use XML, because then you've just precluded me from moving forward when there's a better way.
Which violates
Is XML the right way to do that?
Yeah,
it happens to be what we have. Is that really the best way?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is it may not be the best way, but if you want to use something as an exemplar and say, when you do it, here's an example of what we're looking for. I don't have any problem with that.
And it's not the definitive only.
It's not
example.
The only way to get there. That's all.
What if we say computable representation?
Yeah. That would
aren't there lots of things that we can't represent in the XML? I mean, shouldn't we be searching for something that would be more amenable to the representations we want to make and sort of not really use the XML anymore? I mean, you know, the idea behind XML is to make it machine readable.
So
what are the advantages we would get out of, what would we make machine readable in this situation, and what advantage would that bring?
Well, what we're trying to get at is, it doesn't have to be XML, but you can pick some computed example of what your English language is describing to make explicit what you're getting at. That's all I'm saying.
Like NLP?
Yeah, I think that makes sense, sure.
Yeah.
XML is basically nothing, right? It's just triangle brackets sideways on English. That's all. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't have semantic actual like weight.
Unless you put a schema to it, unless you put an entire schema to it.
So XML is
inherently hierarchical, though, and I'm not sure that something that's inherently hierarchical is a good model for representing this information.
Right.
It,
so we're not saying
it's actually quite bad.
Yeah, we're not saying you have to use it. We're saying if you want to give an exemplar of what this language is describing so that people have a concrete view, you can do that. But don't.
Sure. There's two things. Right now we have the XML, and I understand what you're saying, but right now we have the XML as a representation. I'm wondering if we're suggesting that NQF should not present these things in XML. You know, somebody could present them in XML, but I'm wondering if we're suggesting that NQF should not present them in XML because it's not a particularly good way to represent them.
Well, if you've got a better way, we can represent it however you want.
So let me ask a question. I think Query Health went through some of these questions.
Yeah.
So they looked at HTMF and the RIM patterns, and the first question was, I believe, and I want to put words in your mouth, Eric, but, well, should we just use SQL queries? Should we just use JavaScript? Should we just use HQuery?
We actually asked about NLP.
Right, and NLP.
Should we just send English?
Right.
And allow for interpretation of what the English is actually asking for.
So that could be a standard English way of expressing it, and would QDM be a potential way to help describe how that could be expressed? But the problem was you couldn't come up with what is a standard and how to deal with the context with existing query languages.
Yes.
So the English could say it, but the query language couldn't.
Could not.
So it's the question then, even if I get to these simple phenotypes, they're not so simple, I can't say context either. So is one solution to just put the English language in, but we need a way to express logic in that too, so people have it consistently stated.
Right.
So
the HL7 solution to that issue is they just always append the narrative blurb with, in addition to the HL7 structured information, and actually the legally right part of the part of the XML message that actually has a legal weight for the actual medical record is the narrative.
Right.
So that means HL7 isn't done. It means we're way far away from truly, even for our HL7 RIM and all that work that we've done for 25 years, we're not there with like truly having a semantically complete exchange language. And so the easy way is just to say both are right. You have to preserve the English equivalent so you can actually still, whether it's just the same NQF English document that you've been just a status quo or like something more special where it's sort of in a blurb or whatever, but you don't want to completely ignore like the getting some structure to it, because otherwise like why the hell are we funded? We'll just write Word documents and let's just shut down all
the Well, one thing is a style guide for how a standard English style guide hasn't really been there either. Each measure developer has their own style.
Right.
And by having a standard style guide, some of the feedback I've had from folks who are in some of the other rooms here as well has been just reading the English readable. I'm not saying it's the easiest to read, but I can understand better with less ambiguity what was meant in the original spec.
That's right. What I'm going for.
And that's
really,
so
the ambiguity is killing me.
Okay. It's true, because it has really forced us using the QDM. And we're working on 113 measures with the AMA, and we've been butting heads a lot. But we come out with, we all agree on this is what this word means. So no matter how what language you're going to turn it into or what system you're looking at, we know that an encounter means this, that dispensed means this. That so this has been extremely valuable for us.
Yeah.
And I think that the only way you can, and you can't restrict people in terms of what kinds of platforms in XML or language they turn this into, but then you do, then you say with test cases, because that's what we do as well with software vendors, is did you interpret this the correct way? Did you take these 5,000 people and come up
with the same answer as this guy over here.
So I want to, I just want to, real quick, you said style guide, and I'm going to push back on that because I don't think that every measure developer needs to have the same physical, visual representation. I think we can have our own. I think there needs to be a minimum data required, and it needs the specifications or the human readable, whatever you want to call them, needs to have a certain criteria. But if I want to not have it written out longitudinally, but I want to have swim lanes to disseminate my populations and put things in boxes so that they're visually easier to read, I don't think I should be precluded from that, where NCQA may do a flow diagram with arrows and the Joint Commission may do it a different way. I think we just need to all have the same data.
But there have to be some criteria, like there has to be a unified thesaurus. The word you use and the word I use have to be
that
the same.
I'm not, that I'm not denying, but I'm saying the style,
that's
the presentation.
That's different from language.
The style guide that I think you were referring to.
Okay. So, right. Well, I think style guide, I think style sheet.
Oh.
So I think,
He just means,
okay.
I just wanted to reduce the ambiguity so we can function, that's all.
Right.
Yeah. The source of terms, like semantic.
Well, so first of all, there are folks, and I'm not one of them, who believe that EHR should have a standard interface and all EHRs use the same interface for everything.
It's what NIST is ordering.
Sorry?
It's what NIST is ordering.
Yeah. So if that's true, so the same mentality would suggest that all measures should have the same appearance so people know how to read them and they don't have to say, oh, this one's got swim lanes and this one doesn't. So I'm not trying to dictate. I just know there are feelings on both sides of that. But what I'm talking about is if I want to talk about an active diagnosis and inactive diagnosis, use the same terms when you refer to them, and there's a standard definition for those.
Okay. Right.
And I say that there is the performer of the test is an attribute. You use the same term, and you use the same terminology when we can figure out what terminology we use for performance.
Are we
suggesting that the XML is a way of codifying the English, or are we looking for some other way to codify it, or that's just an example of codifying it?
I think what I'm hearing here is the XML, forget the XML.
Right.
Let's just look at the front end. How do we state what we want to say using a standard way to say it? Give me a different term than style guide.
I think that's just weakening your...
Yeah, again, it has different connotations.
You probably have to incorporate... Just say XML doesn't get us all the way there, but you probably have to latch on to XML in some way.
Well, you can have an
example.
It's a
symbol that is something practical.
It doesn't have to be that, but an example is useful.
And if you say XML, I think we're talking about two things, and I want to try to make that distinction. XML language, which it was using because it's cheap and it's really interoperable with different vendor-specific technologies. Then there's also the RIM, which is where that interpretation happens. And I think that's where a lot of the difficulty comes into play. And we refer to challenges with the XML, but those are two different pieces there. So you can look for a better technology for interoperating with different systems, but we can also look for how do we simplify the interpretation.
So the XML doesn't need to be a standard, except...
Well, it's like web pages. This whole thing, if you just imagine web pages, you can have a schema for a type of web page that's highly stylized where you would recognize where to read in each section, no matter what the content is. You can have just the markup language, and then you can have many different types of web pages. You can have an XML-based markup language where you have style sheets that automatically can convert from one way of looking at the same content to another, but yet it's sort of all the browsers can compute it. And then you can have like actual content standards where the same XML web page can have hooks into the actual information to grab it, and then have all the sort of standards or transformations on just the front end part, and that's a little bit more of the sort of RIM in the back end. HQMF is a little bit more like subset of template categories. QDM is more like the list of the data elements. The data element part of QDM is more like the list of the sort of fields that you can use for your markup. And you can still have English blurbs. You can have like English prose, just in plain text, and put one triangle on each side, and then you've got a web page of like basically really light. So, and in fact, there is a sort of direct one-to-one correlation between all these technology layers and the web.
Right.
They're all that's what all this XML is based on, so it's not a completely inappropriate kind of mapping. But so there's a bunch of ways to sort of think of that as a metaphor, okay. And so it just depends on what you're really...
So I'm hearing discussion, so I have a couple questions. I think what I'm hearing recommendation is that we need to, at this point, move away from the RIM and move to a simpler XML schema. This is the recommendation of what I'm hearing in the group. It's not necessarily consistent with the way direction other things are going. I'm looking at Eric to see how does this fit with what else is going on. But even if we did that, where do we determine the best way to describe logic like the delta between two events? Because that's something that there's really push to. I'm looking for, if I look at PHQ-9 measures, there are three of them. One is, if a patient has depression, did they have a PHQ-9? At 6 months, if it was greater than 9 as a result, is it less now?
Right.
And then at 12 months, is it less now?
Yeah.
But so that's one way to do it. Another might be, regardless of what it was at the beginning, is it less 6 months later? And that's what measures are starting to want to ask. Is the diastolic blood pressure less at 6 months? And they mean between 3 and 9 months, basically. It doesn't have to be exact. You have to define which one. So you also then have to say, well, which blood pressure? Amit had 3 today in the office. Which one is the working one I want to work with? And I can't describe that in the measure. So how do I do that? We have ways we can try to say that have been based on RIM. We can simplify that. But where do we go to get that logic, or do we require a convening to develop a new one? I'm looking for advice.
From a precedent perspective, the reason why we picked XML is because the measure or the EHR vendor said, put this in XML.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no pushback, right? Because we didn't know any better at the time. And
what we had.
And so, and then I remember I did this whole Jell-O analysis years ago, and I'm like, I looked at it, and I'm like, okay, I haven't written code in 5 years, but, yeah, this is way too cumbersome to actually use. So I think we're at a point now where we need to decide, do we need to have these executable sort of measures? Is it that we write it, that we just write out the queries for people in a standardized, against a standardized schema to some degree, which is somewhat what I think kind of Query Health is doing, is if you have a standardized schema, you can write a query against it, and you just give people the queries.
Mm-hmm.
And if the schema doesn't support it, we just need a mechanism to either expand the schema or whatever it may be so that that standardized query can be run against it. Because at some point, I think, and this is just my opinion, I think we've overcomplicated everything by trying to put this in XML in a data structure that doesn't support it. And what we're really looking for is a piece of executable code that will run against a database, a data set.
That's why we consider SQL and JavaScript.
Yeah, so if you do it in SQL, you do it in JavaScript, you write the code, there's a lot of other tools out there that you can use to reutilize code and repurpose it and things like that, as opposed to having us rewriting an XML document every single time where you can take a suite and say, I want to use this piece to create this part of the query.
That's fine, but you write in a query in one language.
The schema version is it doesn't work for distributed networks and distributed systems. That's the weakness. So that's why
but
we don't have it.
If the query is done as an example, I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care. But because I can also translate your query into other query languages. I mean, as long as I know what you're looking for, I can get from where you are to where I need to be.
So
queries
don't support things like context or some of the logic, because some is complex. Then do we say they're just not ready for prime time yet until the queries can?
No, that's not.
Well, that doesn't mean that you can't put two pieces together.
What I would say is, that's where there's a difference between the EHR model and the query model, the quality data model or whatever we're calling it. Is you should be allowed to – the whole point of quality measures is having numerators and denominators and relationships between them.
Yeah.
So this idea of preconditions is very natural. And if you want to connect them to guidelines, of course it's based on sequences of steps. And so you're going to have in quality measures naturally temporal relationships. There's no question about that, and that's how human reasoning takes place. So you don't want to cut that out of quality measurement. That's a key core part of quality measurement. So the only question is really, whether you want to constrain the current physical implementations so that you can tell when you're writing them, is this going to be supported right now with more automated systems, or is this going to require more work to kind of produce the answer? And so you just want enough of that element to be in the measure language to give guidance to the measure developers that now they're reaching, as opposed to just they're just doing something that's sort of really easy for people. And, they may be able to just know that because they know how EHRs work, or they may not, but you can build that in a little bit. So a little bit of meta information. And the HQMF template thing, you have to kind of have like a contract between the people asking the questions and the people answering the questions. So the HQMF can be the expression of the sort of individual contract. So in other words, there may be some measures that require more than just a straight query to a database, whether it's because you're collecting it from multiple places, it's over, like it's a national level measure and you have to kind of integrate over many systems, or it requires a lot of inference because there's a lot of depth to the logic. All of that can be just expressed in the query, in the quality model, and then given as a challenge to the HQMF to sort of produce the answer, as opposed to, and so then you can have little sort of elements of each element. So in other words, every concept in the quality data model should be kind of able to latch onto an HQMF template or something like that. Like that kind of relationship.
All right. So I'm having trouble following. You said a lot of things, and I'm having trouble following because that's what we did do
right. In
creating these RIM patterns.
Right.
And
I'm
so.
Not sure we should get rid of them.
So you think they should stay there, but now there are logic statements I can't use because I'm restricted to those. Or do I just use those RIM patterns as templates and break the HL7 connection by just putting in other English statements? And now you...
Right, that's what I was suggesting. You can have two pieces and just write the language bridge between them. We know how to do this. We need these two things put together this way. I'm not going to tell you how to do that step.
It breaks the HL7 piece into here's a RIM pattern and here's the English word for it. I don't care if you read the pattern or the English word, you know what to do.
Right.
And here's how to deal with this compared to that.
Right.
But if HL7 doesn't allow it, put in
blank.
The English statement.
Right.
And
right.
There's blank
that's
in the
I'm
RIM
saying.
Pattern, and we know that hasn't been implemented.
And then you have to fix it in.
So
in
you
the
either
standard.
Use chart reviews or some other method. And if you,
but,
well, you may not have to do that.
Chart,
you have to have a person who writes
the query for you. That's what, yeah.
You can't express it. It doesn't mean they can't do it.
So then the question becomes, herein lies the fundamental question. Why don't we just write the code?
Well,
because
it's not
interoperable.
It's not enduring.
Yeah.
It's not interoperable.
The thing
it's
is,
not universal.
The English language piece is not going to change 5, 10, 15 years from now. What I'm saying about my patient is going to be the same statement in English in 20 years, but it might not be the same statement in SQL, in RIM, in XML in 20 years.
I mean, you can't compute it on the VA database
but
for another 7 years.
The problem you have with free text is somebody has to translate it.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you translate something, it's lost. We don't even allow queries on free text because if I send somebody free text,
but we're not talking about free text.
No,
we're not talking free text.
No.
We're talking structured English statements that equate directly to code. You can change that code. The structure
that's
English
a query.
Yeah, but even XML requires translation. You
right.
Think, like
everything
the drug models.
Right.
Well, like,
but a structured language is a query language. It's a SQL language. That's the structure, right? That's the SQL or whatever you're going to be using.
Yeah.
That's the structure. That's where you're getting the actual structure from the language perspective.
Okay, so let me help. We have 5 minutes in order before we're supposed to
fast.
It went fast. So actually, this will not be the end of the discussion. We plan to find ways to continue to discuss, and right now it may be through email discussions with this group, and we'll
figure that out.
But so when I go back to this. For our discussion this afternoon, when we present, I have here, these are the goals that I think I've heard this group talk about. We need a logical model of a quality measure. We need an electronic tool set to compare measures for common components, hierarchical relationships between them for risk adjustment, and identify what is the list of things CMS needs, I don't know if that's a goal, needs to address for a robust, maybe
put that into a next steps, maybe.
Yeah, if I can remember where I put all these things as I'm working. I'll put next steps at the bottom so I can copy it.
Right.
The goal is there's a relationship between stating a guideline and care delivery, and this is where the measures come in, using measures. Data required for measurement are captured, structured at some point in the usual health data workflow, not at the station checkbox format. And I don't know what, remember what this last one was, create measures. I was trying to capture everything as you guys talked. And
well,
I
create measures from guidelines. That's sort of repeated.
So that's repeated.
Yeah.
Okay. So in that case, let me take this one, and I'm going to copy it. So those are the goals. But there, it's maybe the goal is not necessarily to have a completely queryable.
Well, so just so.
Well, I guess the goal is not to do not limit your e-measures to what can be currently an automated query. It may be more complex than that. That doesn't mean you shouldn't ask the question just because it's more complex than what our technology will 100% do.
I like that.
The goal is a sort of complete data model for the quality measures, not which is distinct from the complete data model for EHR.
Right, right. Right. Yeah. Those are an intersection, but not.
And I think, you know, I think of, so, and this is just my opinion, but I think that an e-measure, an e-specification, and there's various components that make up all the information you need to implement a measure. I think there needs to be a cover sheet. We have this for this measure. We have this for this measure.
Right.
There is no e-measure for it, and maybe it's because it couldn't accommodate. There's a SQL. There's a, you know, a query for it. Here's the query. You know what I mean? There's multiple components. I think we're getting very, like, what do we need 100%? And I think there's a bunch of things we need, and we just need to figure out what measures fit into that and then work towards improvement over time.
Right, because I don't
Does that
mind
make sense?
If you tell me 80% of what I can do in an automated way, and 20% we can get bits and pieces, but not 100% of it in an automated way. I can live with that, because I can work towards the rest.
Right, but you just need to give somebody and let them know.
You need to give a funding plan for HTML for like 7 years, not just 1 year, right? So,
all right.
let's
keep going to make sure. The challenges, we talked about liquidity versus expressivity. I've heard people talk about that. Overall measurement burden is too cumbersome. Copyright issues, hardwired. EHRs have a model of use. Measures require a model of meaning. Prescriptive requirements as to exactly where in the EHR must be captured and stored limit innovation. HL7 process is challenging due to the limited number of individuals with expertise and a long balance cycle. Implementation is tough because of long cycle times and full implementation.
Yeah, that 18-month cycle time is the best case, because that's the fastest you can do it.
Yeah, okay. Then we get to recommendations, and we may have too many, and I want to try to work this. One, implementation requires recommendations are create an implementation method beyond the scope of the average EHR intent and capability. Well, for instance, inference engines, natural language processing. We okay there?
Yep.
Or maybe it's enable.
Yeah. Why don't you say current EHR? That way, if we're not...
not average, but current.
...versions on EHRs, just like saying they might evolve.
Well, okay. They will.
Yeah. Avoid prescriptive requirements as to exactly where in the EHR the data must be captured and stored.
Yeah.
Logical...
identify?
Now, I would say you are at NQF. You can say that might be the QDM.
Yeah, a more elaborated version.
Could be.
I would say identify or expand, maybe, logical model.
Okay. Yeah?
What about having an owner... the chef for the standard process. So if it takes 18 months to do this, it takes tedious to do HL7, you know, having an owner to shepherd the whole standards development process. I mean, would NQF own that?
in eternity?
Well, there's stakeholders in it.
Who are the stakeholders? Developers and the quality.
ONC has, so there's some efforts to do that from ONC. They have a budget to fund contracted entities like Lantana or...
Right, so that these folks can shepherd
a particular
project
around a balloting, but... in general, it's supposed to be bottom up. It's not completely
right.
And the other thing is, so from our perspective, and I'm sure from NCQA, we have measures that are not just in government programs.
Right.
So, like, we have to think about all these other things
too, beyond that.
For the DHR model development, we didn't mention the word tool set, because the whole point of it is to sort of use this quality data model to actually create computational tools to help measure developers author measures or. The whole measured development process itself.
Someone would say, isn't that the authoring tool?
Yeah,
but it's not enough.
A lot more.
I'm going to push back. We wouldn't use that. We have our own methodology that we utilize to develop our measures. And
authoring
we have.
Tools.
Thank you.
Platforms and tools. That,
I mean, right?
It's not even so much develop the tools, but set a base upon which your tool and your tool can both work.
Right. So,
I mean, that's what you really want. You don't want me to tell you what kind of tool to use, or you what kind of tool to use.
Right.
Want to tell you that if you use these tools, it has to fit in that box.
Well, that's what the QDM would be, and then there'd be like tools that are built on top of that, but with multiple vendors or multiple.
Just one concern.
Yeah,
even within the same match, we have multiple ways to represent the same thing. I mean, I can't imagine we have multiple tools where you have a lot of that.
But that's where
that's what we're trying to reduce is the ambiguity.
Where, like, validation tools and semantic equivalence, like functionality comes in, whether it's the list of data elements or
if we have
common reduction
of
common.
We're talking about training and education.
I mean,
we have more evolved to standard templates for standard queries. This is a little complex. I think what we were trying to say is break the HQMF. I mean, let's just
conceptually
right out there.
Yeah,
and say that.
Well, HQMS could be doing that. I don't think we need to.
Yeah, don't say break. Say go beyond.
That's their intent.
Expand.
You know, go beyond that.
Expand
or
allow for.
So the,
I like break.
We want to make sure that.
Yeah, you would.
The thing is, HQMF will exist.
Yes.
And we need to sort of find a way to allow the evolution of HQMF. That doesn't constrain
evolve.
Quality measurement.
Evolve. That's
yeah,
what
yeah,
it is.
That's right.
Is
evolve.
Open it to the evolutionary process. That's what you need to do.
Yeah. When you say break, you just mean
what?
Break it open.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Break
yeah.
it as
a not break,
break
it
open.
Break it bad, but yeah.
Right. That is what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's such
but
a fun
in
word.
A, so it can evolve, right? Not
yeah.
the way that we're going to destroy.
Well, break it open from an HL7 perspective. Stop constraining me. Let me break it open and say what I need to say so I can get this in there. And even though someone has to read a component, let them read it because they can't directly query anyway.
So can I just ask this question? Because I'm like still like really trying to figure this out. If we like, so you're going to basically write an XML document with a bunch of text in it in between some patterns.
Yes, and the way that QDM can get around the constraints of HQMF, let's just, if we're really going to be sort of honest.
I'm like really trying to like
think
about
it. We're going to go for the bullseye. Here's the deal, okay? So the way, so it's like a cat and mouse thing, right? So so you use XML against itself. XML doesn't specify the sort of building blocks, list of things that are then put into a hierarchical structure. XML doesn't say anything about that. It just says how you actually, when you do have building blocks, what the relationship is between them.
Yeah.
And QDM could control the extensible list of those building blocks. And so therefore, even if XML comes up with a standard, QDM comes out from under it by just adding more building blocks, and all of a sudden you have all these other documents that you can suddenly express that are still formally in this sort of meaningless sort of XML-based standard, right? So the meaning comes from the mapping between those building blocks and real meaning, right? So that's the strategy. So that's why I use a library and templates of HQMF, because basically it allows future evolution without actually kind of hamstringing yourself with sort of the current,
yeah.
you know,
limitations.
One ballot.
Yeah, we have to get a UML model of that approach. So the constraint is always going to be
the relationships to the rim, because that
well, you're always going to be chasing.
It's a defining factor in anything you create when it comes to a template.
Yeah, you're always going to be chasing to get the standard up to what your mind has thought you need to do. That's never going away. You just want to make it feasible to keep moving forward.
But you can add past the rim. You don't. That's the thing. Like you don't have to throw away the rim completely. You can just sort of.
No, we want to build on what we've got, but we don't want to be so limited by it we can't move on.
So is the HQMF, as we're talking about it, really the use case as we are breaking it apart to add these instruction for here's the use case for HL7's got to address this in a simpler way and be able to handle what I now have in English to build the next version.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make it, the problem is if we use that and you want to put it in TRICARE and your software, that is, then if it comes to you and you go to HL7, you say it doesn't match conformance, I can't use it. That's the kind of feedback we often get. The HQMF, as you gave it to me, has some new things in it that don't match HL7.
I have members that sit on HL7. I go to them and say, get to work. That's what I do.
but what we don't want to do is make measures for the information we need, wait a 3-year cycle to be able to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, I'm like, is it even
HL7
practical?
For these changes?
Can you repeat that?
Are you going to go to ballot with HL7 for changes that you need for these measures?
That was my whole thing. That's why I was really trying to drive what we're doing, because it seems like we're going to be going to HL7 every single time we have a measure that HQMF can't handle something in a measure, and I will forever be at balloting stuff at HL7.
I'm not saying that you have to have the ballot before you can do the measure. I think the measure, what we need to know, should not be limited by the way we can ask it. Just because I have a hammer doesn't mean everything in the world's a nail.
So what it might mean is the ballot, and maybe it needs to be a sooner ballot that has simplicity, that there are statements that can occur between each section that are English to give instruction even though it's not fully implementable.
Right, that's what I'm arguing.
That makes that part of
it. We just knew that.
But then what's the point of having the HL7 structure?
HL7 cannot capture everything that's computable. I mean,
right.
Or
that
everything
that's
computable. Why bother?
Why bother?
Because it still gets
because
you part of it.
You still get part of the way there.
Yeah.
You leverage it.
Let's be clear. When you say, why do we build HL7? If you start to go down this path of creating your own standard or doing it your own way, you have a problem of anybody could follow that pattern that you're offering to them and basically just do it any way.
Right.
And then nothing is interrupted.
Yeah. Nothing's going to get done.
You're not going anywhere.
We're going backwards,
But there's a difference between I'm going to pass something off to you so you have it, and I'm going to compute something that has meaning for me. I'm not trying to have you compute something. I'm trying to give you something. When I'm talking about interoperability, I want to pass what I know to you.
And
not
retain,
the same
and
as
retain,
saying, you're going to do your math your way and I'm going to do math my way.
But retaining the meaning when you say
all you're attacking is the technical side. You're
saying the constraint.
You're not attacking the semantic or process side, which is I'm going to have any idea what you're sending to me, what it means. And I might not know how you created it.
I want to take the way you got the answer and separate it out from giving me what you know.
But if we have an essential set of data,
one example, that's the problem. You're creating a standard on the basis of NQF-59.
If I can
sit here till you get to like enough examples,
I need a volunteer.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. There's not enough. Totally agree with that.
And Neil, I need a volunteer.
For the presentation?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll speak slowly. I'll volunteer.
Are you willing to do that? Well, you have the slides just created.
And Neil,
you guys are okay with
a lot more slowly than you usually do.
Yeah.
I captured what we were saying.
From
my perspective, what I think I heard. So I want you to tell me this. We're supposed to be on break, but I'm going to tell you this. I think I heard there is value to the HL7 standard because it has some components that at least standardize the context, and I can express it even though some people may never want to read it and they want to look at the English side, and that might not be a bad thing, but that the HQMF needs to have sections between the ability to add sections wherever you need it to be able to say in English something that you can't express otherwise.
Yeah.
so that at least it can say, I need this data element. Here's what I want you to do with it. I don't know how to say it. Here's, I need this element. But what it means is, for the QDM, the way to express that logic in English, we need convening and consensus around doing it the same way. So whether you put it in swim lane diagrams and Mary puts it in a longer text, long document, it doesn't matter. But what does matter is when you say this happened before that, you use the same syntax.
Right. So the thought process is you can change the skin, you know.
Yeah. But so
I could change the way it looks, but it always has the same information. So if I were to hand it off to any other measure developer, they could put it in their format, and you get the exact same thing. It would just
look a little
bit
different.
Except
if
it's
coming
for
the
AMA,
then
it's copyrighted,
and I can't
change
anything.
You know.
So
talk to my legal department.
What I will need from
you guys. Are you licensed to use our measure?
Just so you guys know, what I am going to need is, since the HL7 comparators we use are kind of awkward in English readability.
Oh, yeah.
So where is what is a standard set of comparisons that we can use so that as we go forward, we make this much more readable.
Right.
The influenza vaccine starts before the start of the measurement year by 122 days, because I want to go back to September. How can I just say September 1 and March 31st or something like that?
That's ridiculous. That's like Lexstar from database where date is between X and
it is something that can be represented in SQL and in XML, so why can't it be represented in the RIM?
No, because the thing is there's different date fields that refer to transaction time, valid time, and there may be 7 date fields associated with each record.
Right.
And the SQL model, it's not going to basically be able to do...
Well, you need a data model on top of the SQL coding. I mean, like...
But you need to be able to read the SQL into that model.
No matter what, this is all going to go into some sort of query language.
Or Java.
I mean, like it is. So, like...
SQL does not guarantee computability, right?
Correct. I'm not saying that it does.
Right.
And so I love SQL. I mean, that... But it's actually too sophisticated.
It's a step.
All right, so what I have to tell you is we do have to go upstairs.
It is time.
All right, so what you're going to see in a QDM publication in May is a question for what should be the right language for the logic. And we're going to end up getting answers to that. But for now, for MU2...
It's not the containing US Army in the
We should be thinking MU3 anyway. I mean, we can't be thinking MU2 at this point.
And you know, Farza and Judy have both said MU3 is going to happen.
Yeah.
Hell or high water. So, I really thank you for listening in, and I heard some good presentations. There is a phone number back for the main session upstairs, and a web sign on for that as well.
So okay, thanks everybody
participating there. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Excuse me, Ahmed. I have to interrupt. Ahmed, as staff, I need your attention. Do I just hang up here?
Yeah. And